Welcome aboard, you people. Throat Con Show with Anna DeBlantis for another day of broadcast insolence, and I would like to just chastise our news personality, Kim Gordon, for saying what she just said.
What did she say?
She used the S word twice.
I know, I did.
Light, and then continues.
And I have to tell you, it's coming back for Sunday, too, the S word.
Oh, no!
Did she mention it's not going to get above freezing tomorrow? Did you mention that in the last report?
We're looking at a high of 31 on Friday, 32 on Thursday. And then I saw next week, the extended forecast is even colder.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that.
Yeah, high of 23, I think, on Tuesday.
Oh, my.
Do you think Mother Nature has been seeing all the Christmas ads and thinks that she's behind?
Well, I honestly, did you see the Cirrus Tower last night? It was red and green.
What?
The top of the Cirrus Tower.
Oh, goodness.
It was red and green last night.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was.
What happened to Thanksgiving?
This is the start of the war on Thanksgiving.
I know. Yeah,
this
Kevin.
Is where it happens.
You and I.
Not Thanksgiving.
I mean, the war, obviously, the war on Christmas is over, right? I mean, that was.
Did we win the war or lose the war?
Well, apparently it won. It's taken over 2 months now.
Right. Christmas won the war.
Happy to hear that.
You have to say Merry Christmas. You can't, as a matter of fact, you can't wish anybody who celebrates a holiday around Christmas a happy whatever it is for them, because it's somehow offensive to do that to Christmas. So we Merry Christmas, but even Thanksgiving has now been taken away, and I don't know what the hell happened. Why?
And Thanksgiving's great. Everything about it: family, football, turkey.
Yeah, it's about eating.
It's about eating.
And family and being thankful.
That's a good part. Putting sweatpants on after you consume 5,000 calories of food.
And there's the one relative who undoes his pants at the table. Yep. Oh.
Right, like showing off how much he ate.
Yeah.
Look how much my waist just expanded.
Yeah.
Nobody ate more than I did.
It's all good.
They take something to go as well. That's the person. Hey, you can eat all that?
But somehow has room for pie. Always.
Has room for pie, and then they need a turkey sandwich for the long 30-minute ride home.
Exactly. Uh-huh. I'm going to eat that.
A little cranberry sauce on there.
Aww. I'm telling you, I've had more than one Thanksgiving just gone upstairs and said, "Guy, you guys figure it out. I'm calling the police after 10.
You leave everybody?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Yes, that's been done.
Call the police on your own party.
You've seen that in parties that I've had for the show at the house.
I've definitely seen that.
Where I just go, all right, I'm leaving. Thank you. Security will let you out.
Where did Ro go?
Ghost your own guests in your own home.
The Irish exit in your home.
Yeah. You can't. I don't know if you can. That's a war. Are we at war with Ireland? I don't know at any given moment. I have to check
with the Irish and make sure they're okay with that.
Okay. Yeah. For sure. All right. On the program today, we got Mr. Ben Bradley going to join us in just a little bit. Is the superintendent of police about to step down? I'll talk about that. Oh, and Cubs fans.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be able to see your beloved Cubs on your TV anymore? That's a big question. The people at Marquee Network, that's the new Cubs television network.
Yeah, where you're going to see almost all of the games, right?
Does not have a deal with Comcast Chicago.
Not yet.
No.
Or RCN. I have RCN. I don't think they do with them either.
They do, however, have a deal with Comcast Des Moines. So if you want to move to Des Moines to see the games, you're going to be in really good shape.
Drive there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, so Robert Chanik from the Tribune will be here to explain a little bit about the business mechanics that are surrounding that. They make sense when you stop and you think about it. I mean, there are a bunch of reasons why this is happening. Now, I happen to believe that it's all going to get worked out.
I do, too. It seems like one of those 11th hour things.
Yeah. So.
And how much will it cost everyone to watch Cubs?
Right, and that's the question.
Okay,
how much?
Good question.
Swear to God, how much do I have to pay? I used to pay $7 to get into the game. I mean, that was what bleacher seats went for. All right, call me a dinosaur and all the stuff that people do, but I mean, people remember that when you could get in for $7, and it was like, and now it's going to be $7 a month, so that you have the privilege of maybe watching it or missing it.
Plus, add that to all your other cable bills and streaming the bills and all the new ones coming out that you have to decide whether you want Apple Plus streaming and Disney Plus and Disney.
They have me.
Amazon.
I've been a la carted to death.
And yet you're buying them all, so they're going to keep offering them to you, Ralph. This is the way it goes.
Well, I'm not going to buy them all. I'm going to finally
rebel. You're
going to
put a firm line in the sand now.
I am. I am. I'm thinking about going just over the top on everything. I don't know. I've also decided maybe I should watch less television. That might be good for my lifespan. A, it might require me to actually get out of my bed. That's the first
thing.
We're
all going to go back to books. Just watch.
Yeah.
What will you do with your 22 televisions?
I will donate them to science.
Oh.
To a museum.
True story, my daughter was watching The Little Mermaid live yesterday on ABC, and then all of a sudden she said, where did my show go? What happened to my show? And it was a commercial. That generation, she's seven, they don't understand commercials.
Oh, boy. There's going to be no patience.
Because they're used to YouTube, and they have to watch a little ad in order to see their thing. And yeah, but it was a weird experience. She kept thinking it went away, like she had gone to another channel or something.
Well, that's interesting, because the patience thing is fascinating. Back to Dinosaur Land, back in the 80s, when there were sociologists telling us that 30-second television commercials were going to ruin our patience and inability to accept anything beyond 30 seconds of information. Which is really wrong, because every commercial break on television is 2 minutes. So that's four commercials, or sometimes six commercials, because there's 15-second commercials. So I think they're wrong about that. And I can, you know, and I don't know. All I know is that there's an emu. I don't even understand why there's an emu, but there's an emu constantly on my television.
Because it rhymes with limu.
Okay, if you say so.
That's what they say in the commercial.
Well, what is limu?
What is it? Liberty Mutual?
Yeah, Liberty Shortened. Mutual.
Limu.
Yeah.
L-I-M-U.
Okay. So, anyway, the point is that, yes, it's right. It's ruined my concentration. We'd like to welcome Liberty Mutual as a fine sponsor's radio program as well. So, anyway, that's all I want to say. That's all I want to say is I don't know. Now I got to figure out if I want to watch the Cubs games. I don't know. I got on my Comcast. I already got the Comcast. I got the Sox. I got the Bulls. I got the Hawks.
There you go. More reasons to be a White Sox fan.
I'm telling you, they may be making a mistake here, because I think there are a lot of, and the White Sox are going to be on a little bit of a run here. There may be more kids who grow up as White Sox fans. This is what happened to the Blackhawks.
Right.
Right?
That's true.
The Blackhawks, they decided to go off television, make it harder to find the games. White Sox did this in the 70s and got screwed. And then into the 80s. And then again, the Blackhawks did this with the home games because they wanted to get the parking lots full.
Unless they were sold out, right? Wasn't that the
rule? No. No home games were on TV for the Blackhawks for a decade.
I thought it was only when they were.
That's the NFL rule if you're not sold out. So they. It was like a.
But you lost a generation, essentially.
Because
people who would have become Hawks fans who just had no access to it. Because how many kids, let's face it, get to go to multiple games or even one game?
Right. So there you go.
I didn't.
So we'll find out about that. Okay. That's all coming your way. Don't anybody move, because Lauren Lapka is going to tell you why you're not moving on the roadways.
For the news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
All right. Ben Bradley joins us on the Super Celebrity Satellite from Bradley Place. No relation.
You've upgraded. It used to be the Super Celebrity Hotline, but I get the Super Celebrity Satellite.
You got the satellite. Yeah, that's it. This little interview that we do on WGN Radio and CLTV costs $40,000 a minute.
You know, I remember explaining to my dad a couple of years ago when FaceTime first came out, and he would get frustrated that the FaceTime video picture would kind of seize up as we were talking. He's like, this thing doesn't work. Look, it's freezing up every now and then. But I said, Dad, do you realize you are doing for free a video chat back and forth, something that 5 years ago you would have had to hire a satellite truck, book satellite time, get a photographer on either end, uplink and downlink it, and you're complaining that there's a couple of freeze frames in it?
Yes.
It is amazing to think about how video technology has changed.
Back in my day.
So does he do? Is he hip to the technology now?
Well, he died last year, Anna. So thanks.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
No. Yeah, he passed away last October. He actually had the most advanced iPhone of anyone in our family, and my oldest son, Cullen, now has his old iPhone, and he's walking around with this beautiful phone that, you know, had like three phone numbers and two podcasts on it. No music.
Whose podcast did he like?
Oh, you know what? He loved an NPR podcast, and then he would listen to his audiobooks to fall asleep.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice way to feel close to him, too.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about a couple things. First of all, is Eddie Johnson done as Chicago Police Superintendent?
Still on the job for now. My sense from talking with folks is that at some point here, he'll get the call from City Hall that says, okay, this is enough of a distraction. Go ahead and announce your retirement.
And we're hearing that might be as early as tomorrow. Not that he would be off the job tomorrow, but that there would be some sort of announcement about his future tomorrow, and that he may stay on for several months. He may even have some sort of interim chief shadowing him for a couple months. And that name, Charlie Beck from Los Angeles, the former police chief there, has been thrown out, and the mayor was asked about it today.
And I'm told that the mayor's office has actually reached out to a couple of people about that interim police chief role, including some who...
Gary McCarthy coming back?
Jody Weiss?
Neither, although Artemon Bradley talked to Gary McCarthy today.
Oh, I find that hard to believe.
Yes and wanted to get Gary McCarthy's thoughts on Eddie Johnson and the push to replace him. So Artemon will have that story for us.
Oh, I'll bet he's got thoughts.
Afternoon.
I'll bet he has thoughts. When is he going to admit that he's Trump's guy? That it was the guy that told Trump, I can get this done in 2 days?
We all thought that, but he didn't ride a motorcycle.
Yeah, he didn't ride a motorcycle.
But, you know, Trump didn't specifically say that guy rode the motorcycle.
He said
he was in charge of the guys riding the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Right?
But you would think that he would have just said, hey, I talked to the police superintendent, and he said he can fix this. Right? Like, you didn't need to be all cryptic about it.
Yeah, I suppose that. Well, I don't know. I think that the president likes the drama of things like that.
The president would love Gary McCarthy because the two of them could just sit there and outswagger each other all day long.
No question,
it'd be something.
Without a doubt. So we've been looking into Eddie Johnson's tenure as we get close to this retirement announcement. And it's interesting when you think about how he came in, right? It was at the height of the protests over Laquan McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
Rahm Emanuel was in trouble. Eddie Johnson was not recommended by the police board.
Nope. He didn't try to put his own name to the...
Didn't even apply.
Process, right.
But I looked up the numbers, and Eddie Johnson, during his first... 2016 is when he came on the job as superintendent, and Chicago had 762 murders that year, 300 more than the previous year. Now, Eddie came on in March, so you can't... Mm-hmm. This huge surge in murders that started before he got in... And then they've just now gotten back down to levels that existed before he came into office. This is what he's been battling his entire time as the department's top cop.
Yeah, and one of the issues here, though, and it's an important issue, and people in our business are reticent to acknowledge this because there's no way to prove it. But there was a... but I think it's absolutely true because the police will tell you the people who work the streets was when cops started pulling off of the idea of the stop and frisk and those kinds of things. When they're just pulling people over just to pull them over, right? Just to stop. You got a bunch of teenagers in the car, you're going to pull it over. That was just what they were doing on the South and West Side. And yes, it was primarily African-American kids or Hispanic kids, right? That's in groups that they were pulling over. And then you can argue about the constitutionality of all that, the ACLU and all the rest of those things, but they were doing that. And they were pulling kids out of cars, and they were frisking them, and if they didn't have anything on them, they put them back in the cars and they went away. They were taking more guns off the street back then, and they were, and there was more of a presence, there was more of a personality presence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was more engagements between officers and people on the streets. And what happened in the wake of Ferguson and Laquan McDonald was the number of street stops dropped dramatically.
Correct.
You had to do new paperwork. You had to justify who you were stopping and why.
Right.
Even if you talked to a group on a corner, you had to do a different report for each individual you spoke to, even if for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Change.
So it changed everything.
It made the job of being the police in this city a lot more difficult.
So a lot of to the other side, to the shooter side of this equation, a lot of people who decided, and yeah, I know you're doing this story about murders and about how easy it is to get away with murders in Chicago. It's still a clearance rate under half of the murders get actually solved in the city, is because the those people who are deciding that they're going to go out as a part of their daily business and shoot other people. That is their job. That's the way they look at the way that they protect their
business. And
they're
not going to be challenged when they're out on the street.
Right. And those folks who have grown up in a generational circumstance in which that has been the case for the last two or three generations of their family or people in their neighborhood, that many of those people have never even left the neighborhood that they're living in, right? Not very far away if they've left the neighborhood for any period of time. That's an endemic part of the problem here. We're not dealing with that side of the equation. And I think that they felt more freed to just go ahead and do what they had to do. And I think there was also a fairly significant gang-on-gang beef that was going on in the city at that point. And it just got super hot. And people were just shooting each other and shooting each other and shooting each other. And that's, you know, you go back to that little boy who was killed, right? They just had the trial for that.
Right.
Tyshawn Lee. That was at the apex of that. And that clearly was a gang dispute. Actually, a family/gang dispute.
But the other thing is, when you're not catching the people who are doing the shooting and the killing, they're free to continue to do it. And and we're going to get into this in a series of reports we're doing called Getting Away with Murder, starting tonight at 9 o'clock. Tonight at 9, we've focus on witnesses who won't cooperate, why they won't cooperate, and where that leaves a detective, an investigator who's trying to close a case.
All right.
And then next week, we're going to look specifically at that point you made, Ro, which is when people in the community take it into their own hands.
Got it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll see you. See you then. Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right. The Cubs fans, the question might be asked, do you think you're going to ever be able to see your team on television again? That is a question I think that is in the minds of a lot, because the Cubs have now moved to their own private network, the Marquee Network. And the Marquee Network is... you got to figure out how to get it. You're going to have to pay a subscription either through your cable or satellite provider, or you're going to be able to go on the interwebs, I'm assuming, and get it as well. Robert Chanik writes about the media for the Chicago Tribune. And thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
The biggest provider in the Chicago area at the moment is Comcast, right? Xfinity.
That's correct.
They have the most amount of households in the Chicago area, and they have not cut a deal yet with the Cubs, the Marquee Network, to carriage, as they like to say here, because there's a dispute about the fees. I think we might want to go back and just explain quickly how that whole thing works, because I think people don't realize that the cable company pays these different networks that are on it to carry, to get on the network, right? To get on the cable system.
They do, yeah.
And they have not come up with a price that is suitable for either, because the Marquee Network is going to be a premium product, right?
They want to include it in the basic package, but if you look at, like, on your Comcast bill, you'll see a line item, whether you want it or not, for NBC Sports Chicago, for your regional sports network. So ultimately, you know, the viewers pay for regional sports programming.
So that's on there now, right? That's new, because that new NBC Chicago, NBC Sports Chicago, is basically a wholly owned subsidiary of the Sox, the Bulls, and the Blackhawks.
Well, there's another owner, interestingly enough, and it's Comcast. So
right,
and not surprisingly, Comcast has a carriage agreement in place with
itself.
With the network. But so ultimately, one of the things is the new Marquee Network, which is a partnership between the Cubs and Sinclair. Remember them?
Mm-hmm.
They're actually big, and they bought, I think it's 21 Fox regional sports networks and closed that deal in August. So they're big in sports networks now, regional sports networks. But it's this partnership. And they then go market this, and it's going to add to your bill if your cable provider picks it up. You'll see two line items then for the regional sports network, or one big number. But
how much is it, Robert?
Yeah. We don't really know exactly. I did some breakouts, and it was back in May. let me check my notes again to remember, but it was, okay, the right now, most people pay in the area about $9 a month for your regional sports network if you're a cable subscriber.
Okay.
And adding Marquee will supposedly, according to the people I talked to, add about $4 more to the bill, and it'll be,
it'll be $4 a month to get the Cubs. And then what other programming, whatever Marquee offers is other programming when the Cubs aren't on. Because it's not, the idea here is to actually have the Cubs Cubs games for an entire year of broadcast, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, it would be 6% would be the Cubs broadcasts of that entire schedule. There's 94% of the schedule that they have to figure out how to, obviously there'll be repeats of the games, I'm assuming.
Right.
But then they have to come up with original programming. I think they're also going to play some classic games. And they were going to, do some other things. I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden you had, some sort of, like, memorabilia show, where they're selling stuff late at night. Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of time to fill. I mean, it used to be that TV networks would go off the air. In the cable world, they don't. So they got to do something. And the question is, do you really want to pay an extra $4 a month for that, or is there another way to get the Cubs games, through, you'd have to watch the, through the internet, right? I mean, there's going to be an over-the-top. If you want to get the Marquee network for your computer, is it going to cost you $4 a month? Do we know?
Well, they have to strike the same kind of carriage deals with the, streaming services, and haven't announced any yet. So, that's hopefully for Cubs fans, that's coming.
Right, for YouTube or for, any of those people that are doing that. Yeah.
I think it's just wild to think about that after, 70-some years, it won't be available over the air. You won't be able to just turn on your TV and get the Cubs games unless you're paying for it. Now, even if it's $4 or whatever the number is, you're going to start having to include that. Or are there other ways?
There are about a dozen games that are reserved for the national TV broadcasts. So some of them will pop up on Fox on Saturday.
Or on ESPN.
Yeah, exactly. Well, ESPN, though, you still have to pay for, but yes.
Right, but you're triple pay because you're already going to get the ESPN. I have ESPN for game day, for college game day. And I don't want to talk about
anything
else.
Sorry, in the package. Yeah. You're paying for it.
I'm already paying. I got it.
There you go. So you're all right.
I can't figure out, Robert, how many things I'm actually paying for.
Don't do the math.
I think we should do it on the air. I'd like to go through everything that I am paying for.
Let's break your bill out line on it by line on them, and when we're done with that, we can do mine, please. So.
Right. It's too much.
But it's hidden. Robert, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Thanks.
Good to be with you.
Thanks. Chicago Tribune. I don't even know how to do it because I can't go to my credit card bill because half the stuff is going through my Apple box.
So do you get an e-bill? Doesn't it break down line by line everything that you're paying
but
for?
Yes, but some of the stuff is on iTunes.
Oh,
so my subscriptions are on iTunes.
Platforms.
What about your email?
What about my email?
Shouldn't you be getting emails about your service or whatever from each group, like Netflix or Hulu?
Yeah, I mean, I do get Netflix. Here's what we think you should binge on tonight, and it's creepy because it seems to know me, and I don't like that. I'm tired of my digital world figuring me out.
More so than your regular world.
Yeah. Well, the regular world, I figure they always have my number. But my digital world, this is more intimate, right? Because it's really figuring
me out.
That's
what I mean. Yeah. You kind of know what you're going shopping for, what you're watching.
If you think that's weird, I opened up WGNradio.com today when I got into work, and the advertisement on the side of our screen was a vitamin I took last night.
And did you ever search for it?
No!
Okay, that's the stuff that freaks me out,
And I never even talked about it.
Did you think it, though?
See, they can control your thoughts now, Lauren.
I mean, I sat in front of my phone and iPad and took them.
Did you? Oh, see, the iPad.
Are you watching now, too?
Yeah. When did you go and buy it, or did someone else buy it?
No. My mom bought them.
Oh, my gosh.
My mom bought them.
Weird, right?
Mm-hmm. Using your credit card?
Well, I remember.
No.
Your facial recognition?
So, entirely separate computer and everything.
Uh-huh. I remember talking about a very specific product that didn't fall in the line of things I had bought before, and I started getting ads for that.
Yeah, it is creepy.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's what I started getting ads for that because somebody mentioned it in my presence. Yeah, that's it.
I don't know where they figure this stuff out. How does this happen? Freaks you out, though.
And they sometimes do target you based on what your friends are buying. That's what we learned from that, that documentary that's so scary about how they were able to get into people's minds in 2016. Yeah, the great hack. Is that it's not necessarily what you're doing. It's who you associate with, who your Facebook friends are and all the rest of that. Because they want them to influence you or you to influence them. Woo! I don't know how... We had a very simple problem when we started this segment.
We did. It was just about paying $4 extra per month for the Cubs if you're a Comcast customer, right? Because right now they don't have a deal. I
can't wait to see how they fill programming on this network.
Oh my God.
You know, like, will there be Bears stuff? You know, will there be a Bears postgame show? NBC Sports Chicago has a Bears postgame show. They don't call it the Bears postgame show. They call it the Chicago Football Aftergame Show or whatever like that. Mm-hmm. Like, how much will they be willing to dip into other teams'
business?
You know, there's a lot of programming to fill here.
Right.
A lot.
Well, the idea was that they were going to do things that, you know, documentaries. That's all very expensive. You're just picking up the bill for it.
I think some of the cool stuff will be the behind-the-scenes stuff that local news agencies may not get complete access to, or maybe less of it. I think some of that stuff's going to be really cool.
Like what?
Like following Javi Baez around for a week, seeing his life, seeing his world, one of the more interesting guys in baseball. Following Anthony Rizzo around, stuff like that. Stuff
what about going into like the disco room after they win?
Stuff like that.
Clubbed up.
Okay. Their version of Club Dub, which I believe is still alive. I think Club Dub may have been shut down.
No, it hasn't been very active. The DJ has been sent home for a while.
The last time the Bears won a game, the White Sox also won a game. That's how long ago it was. September 29th, final game of the regular season, the Sox won and the Bears won. Doesn't it feel like baseball is a lifetime ago for the Cubs and Sox?
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Put some perspective.
Yep. Thank you. All right. We'll get to your phone call, 312-981-7200. That is our telephone number if you'd like to join in on this. And some people, they don't know what to do. They're not quite sure what to do about how to find anything anymore, let alone the Cubs. We'll get right back to it on the other side. But first, Lauren Lapka tells us what's happening on the road. Come. RoCon Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Okay, so we're talking about how hard it's going to be able to find anything on the TV.
It is already.
Come 2020. Because almost everything is, you're having to pay extra for it. And one of the things that has Cubs fans completely freaked out is the fact that Marquee Network, which is the only place you're going to be able to see Cubs games other than on Fox or ESPN for national games.
Just like 12 games a year.
That... You got to go. If you have Comcast, they haven't struck a deal with Comcast here. And there is an impediment, a major impediment to striking a deal with Comcast, since Comcast owns part of the network that is going to be the White Sox and the Bulls and the Blackhawks. So
when the Cubs were a part of that.
Right. They were.
Kind of awkward.
Yes.
Hey, ex-girlfriend, remember us? Want to kind of get back together? Sort of.
Well,
kind of.
How much are you going to pay us?
You want to still
board?
Be friends, right?
Still
but this
friends.
Is my new girlfriend.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
A little bit of that.
Yeah. That doesn't work. The other thing is that there wasn't really even a... There was an attempt to try to get some of the games, I think, placed in other places, you know, for broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's smart to put them on broadcast anyway, not just the Fox, you know, Game of the Week or whatever, because it's only a couple of games a year. But, you know, Channel 9? That was so sad. When Channel 9 was running that ad, you know, like at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. You know, it was like one of those things where, like, at the end of a movie where someone dies, and they're like, yeah.
It was
in memoriam?
Yes. But you know what I mean? It was like a love story where, you know, we had the really, you know, where they go back, and either there's a breakup or a death, and they go back and they show how the whole thing came together, and you start to weep uncontrollably.
Oh, like the life of ...
Yeah. That's what it felt like. You know, Ronnie clicking his heels and all of that on Channel 9, and then all of a sudden, oh, my God.
Oh, I know.
Had a good run.
It's all changing.
Yeah. I don't know what to do. Scott, you're on WGN. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Ro, how are you?
All right.
Good. So I just had a question about this whole Comcast thing, because I wonder if Comcast realizes, I hope they do, I wouldn't mind if it was like HBO and people bought into it if they wanted to use it, because I'm not a Cubs fan, and there's no way that I will pay, or whether it be $4 or $5, for it. When I'm not going to use it, I will actually cancel my service.
Well, that's interesting, because this is an, you know, in a lot of cases, those are called opt-outs. right? Where if you want to opt out of a certain, and you do that already with your Comcast, right? You may not be taking all of the different premium channels. You may not be taking some of the other, you know, there's other packages that you can get, like Southeast Conference and stuff like that. So if you're not doing it, if there's an opt out. Now, the question here was going to be, originally this was pitched as an opt in. If you wanted it, it was just going to get cleared and then you'd pay the money. But that appears not to be the case right now. They haven't even come to that deal. This is
and one more.
This would be a thing I think you would not be able to opt out of. But go ahead.
Well, also too, what if you're on a 2-year contract? They add that two-year contract, make you start paying $5. They've then nullified the contract. You know how everybody signs up for 2 years, then they start bumping your rate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then you could probably cancel with no ramifications because of that.
Have you read the small print, sir?
It's extremely hard to read.
I invite you, Scott, to read the small print. And also, sometimes you'll get an email that says, hey, by the way, we just changed the rules. We notified you. Thank you. Goodbye. Nice to see you. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Now pay me the extra $4 or $5.
Right.
That's how it works.
Yeah. And they're hoping you won't notice it. Because I don't even know. I mean, I get that.
Exactly.
I get that bill. I still demand a paper bill from them every month because I got them and DirecTV because mm-hmm. I'm just that guy. And when I get those bills, I'm mortified. I don't look at the line items because I'm like, all right, I know I got to cancel some of this stuff, but I can't commit to canceling it because I'm thinking, well, what if I miss this or I miss that? Just like my Comcast. Thank you very much, Scott. My Comcast just canceled one of my favorite channels.
What did they cancel?
It's one of my favorite channels. I don't want to talk about.
Okay. Now it just sounds shady, so I'll just leave it up to you if you want to fill that one
in. No, Turner Classic Movies. I can. They took it off of like the main. I don't know. Somehow they moved it into some premium thing, so I got to pay for it in premium. But I'm already getting it over at DirecTV. But then I'm thinking, what if my satellite goes down? I don't know. I'm very worried about that. So it's weird. I don't understand what they did to me. And it was. And I knew it was part of my package, but we rearranged the packages. Well, how dare you rearrange the packages? Who told you could rearrange my package?
Seems very personal.
Okay.
Just want some heads up, you know?
But they give you the heads up. And then they say, well, we told you. We sent you an email with a bunch of fine print. And then by clicking on the email, you agreed. Did you not notice that? And it said, if you don't agree with this, then you have to write us a letter, handwritten, single spaced, 4 pages or more as to why you need us to cancel. Right? I mean, that's what it's come down to.
Oh, yeah. They know you will not go through the effort to deal with it, and therefore you will just continue to pay.
Right.
It's like an insurance company.
Right. Yes. Although the insurance companies, there are more rules on them now.
Well, I'm saying they'll end up not paying for something, and you're like, I'm pretty sure you should be paying for this, and then they're like, no, and you're like, yeah, here's why, and they're like, oh, I don't know, and then you're like, yeah, and then they're eventually like, okay, you're right, but how many people are actually willing to put up with that argument?
Yeah, you got it, and then you got to make a phone call.
Exactly.
And then they get it, and then they, I'm sorry, you've called the wrong number.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
Oh, man.
Difficult to do.
Yeah. So, anyway, well, we wish. I think that cooler heads will prevail. There's a reason that this is a story right now in November. They're trying to create some heat. They're trying to create some controversy around this. I think the Cubs are trying to say, hey, listen, you're not going to be able to. They're basically holding Anthony Rizzo hostage. You're not going to be able to see Rizzo. You're not going to be able to see Javi. And then they will cut. By the time you get to spring training, they'll get this figured out, or at least right before the beginning of the season.
You hope, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good for everybody. All right, we have got news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way with Kim Gordon in 2 minutes. Stay close, coming up. Tickets, CKC Sunshine Band. At the Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds, New Buffalo, December 28th. I can't wait to fly, see you again.
Taking you back to your DJ days.
Yeah, it takes me back to my wedding DJ days.
Wedding DJ. Oh, yeah,
we learned that yesterday that I also did a little bit of that work too.
Yeah.
Back in, you know.
It's a resume builder.
With my rig, when I'd taken my rig out.
You were very good at it, we learned.
The back of my Pontiac Turismo.
Yeah, remember you had all that gear as a DJ? You had to have like a certain vehicle that could handle all the stuff you needed.
I had to borrow a my dad's Woody station wagon for the speakers, for the big subwoofer speaker.
Right. And you had to bring like records. Remember like crates of records?
Right.
It was what?
Exactly.
It's a big deal.
That's right. You had to have those milk crates filled with records. Uh-huh. And then the question was, how many milk crates could you steal from the back of the Jewels?
That's where you got to get them, I guess.
That's what you would do.
You didn't go to...
Dominic, over by Dominic's? Mm-hmm. I went by Dominic's sometimes. You didn't want to steal from Dominic's, though, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That was, like Jewel. They're like, oh, I don't know. What's going on? At Dominic's, it was a guy who chased you out and then down the block.
Had to be a fast runner.
Yeah. So anyway, we got that's a long way of saying that we got the Casey and the Sunshine Band tickets coming up a little bit later. What time are we doing that? Hold on.
I don't know.
Oh, that's this hour.
Okay.
Stay close, friends.
Stay close.
Stay close. That just always sounds bad now whenever I hear it.
Yeah.
I can't hear it out of that voice. Stay close. No,
and it runs when she hears somebody
say
that. I do.
Hey, stay close. Okay, I'm leaving.
Am I too close right now?
Yes. Yes.
Wait, hold on.
Very much so.
Could you feel a breath in the back of your neck?
Yes, I do.
All right. Listen, there are worse things to be than a wedding DJ or a radio DJ or whatever the hell kind of DJ I was.
Wedding DJs
Club
do
DJ.
Well.
They can, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I missed it all. I missed the whole DJ thing. It worked out, I guess, but it... At some point, I look back and I look, there are guys, that guy with the mouse thing on his head.
Dead mouse?
Yeah. the guy makes like $40 million a year.
I know.
With a dead mouse head on his head.
That's crazy money. But I would say even just the working DJs, people want a DJ. Even you have DJs at store openings now.
Right.
I mean, at everything.
Right. Really, anyone can be one because we all have phones and iPads and
much easier.
And the thing is, it's not like, back in the day. It was hard work because people come up and make requests. Now I can't make a request.
Right, it's like, get your requests in a half hour early so I can find it.
Right, half hour early.
Go to the crates.
There's no crate. You don't even do that. Everything's pre-mixed and you stand there and then you got those two wheels that do nothing. Stand there and you
pretend to be scratching.
Right, you pretend that you're doing something important, but you're not because the whole thing is the same 2 hour presentation that you take everywhere with
Didn't we just see that with Pete Wentz at the Green Tie Ball? It was very enjoyable, but it didn't seem like he was working very hard up there.
I ran away.
Oh, right. You didn't stay for the Pete Wentz thing.
As soon as he got up on the stage, I had to go.
That was awkward.
Yeah, that's right. I can't be around another working DJ. I just get too jealous. All right. Let me ask you this. Micro-cheating. Did you see this story today? The question on the table here is it micro-cheating if you have a workplace relationship with an attractive coworker in which you are perhaps liking things that they do on Facebook or on the Twitter or the Insta? Is that appropriate?
All depends what you're liking.
Yeah, that's true.
Bikini pic is really different compared to like the meal they made.
Or like a bikini pic from like 3 years ago when they were in college.
Yeah,
or
like
something.
You're really lurking hard into the past.
I like this pic from her spring break trip back junior year. She looks great there. I love her hair. Then it's over the line.
Yeah, commenting would be another step forward.
Yeah.
Hey, never saw this one of you before, but yeah, looking great.
Fire emoji.
Do you work out?
Super hot. How old were you in this picture?
That's a bad one.
You have to ask.
The micro-cheating very easily tips into emotional infidelity. The biggest threat to relationships today, it says here, according to this well-known doctor, who none of us have ever heard of. Sex expert Tracy Cox. Of course.
That's a made-up name, you
think? I get it. Anyway, the point is, it's fair to expect your partner to remove apps like Tinder from their phone, but what about the ones that everybody uses, the social media apps?
Is Instagram especially?
Because it's
but open. Then there's going to be then you're going to have the lurking. So then your wife is like lurking on what you're doing on social media, and then is she going to start following the hot girl from the office? Is that what's going to start happening? And then all of a sudden, it's why is your wife following me? And then the next thing you know, there's like comments. It's a brand new, brave, really messed up world.
It is, because you're right. It used to be people got upset if you left your profile up on a dating site. And that was, you know, you were upset about that. You're like, hey, take it down. I thought we're like exclusive. Now this is like a whole new thing. Because once you are dating and then you're sort of lurking someone who is a maybe possible.
That's the thing. Someone's like, oh, so-and-so, I think you should meet up with her. It's like the very next thing you do before you even say anything is go to her Instagram page. This is how it works, folks. And you look at, you check things out and see what she's out.
That's also how you get the approval of friends. It's like, what do you think? What do you think about this
person? Exactly.
But isn't the Instagram look the most airbrushed look at a person's life possible?
I mean, of course, we all lie on our Instagram. It's like, wow, I look fantastic in that picture. Everyone looks horrible, but we're definitely posting it.
And then people yell at you. They're like, oh my God, I look so bad.
They're like, my eyes are closed. Why did you post that? Like, right. Oh, I look really good.
Someone photobombing does not matter. It does not matter what the photobomber is doing. If you look good, you're posting it on Instagram.
That's true. Well, that's a photobomber's problem, not yours.
That's true.
They shouldn't have been photobombing. Liking posts or sending DMs to attractive people. Just because you love someone doesn't mean you don't stop finding other people attractive.
Okay, DMs is a whole nother thing,
DMs,
too.
DMs, exactly. I say now the best dating app in the game is Instagram.
But then how do you get the date? You just send a comment? Or you have to be following each other, though, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then there's mutual interest. And then next thing you know, you get somebody's phone number, and then you start texting.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Because I think as fake as it can be on Instagram, you do get a decent feel of like what they're all
about. What someone's life or personality is like.
Yeah.
Or what they want you to believe it's like.
Right. Because, well, even those staged ones, you're like, okay, well, apparently this kind of stuff is important to them. Therefore, I either like them or don't like them.
But what did you say? Just say stage ones?
What?
Oh, no, stage
like
photos.
Staged, yeah, like
oh,
staged
I thought there was a term I was missing from the kids. That's a stage one relationship. we just found the problem and let's see how we can work it out.
But there's also the Instagram story component to it as well, where you can see like, oh, she likes to go out with her friends quite a bit. Seems
it's
to
like
be a drinker.
Snapchat.
I like to drink.
Yeah, it's like the Snapchat part of Instagram.
Yeah. It's a whole game, I'm telling you.
Hmm.
Well, so here's the other part of it. If you are a partner of someone and you're watching what they're doing in terms of what posts they're liking, aren't you saying something to yourself already about the relationship?
Yes.
If you care that much to watch
or to look
what
at
kind
search
of posts
history,
yeah.
Or to see that kind of thing, yes.
Never look at someone's search history.
Search
find
history.
Something you don't want to
what's
find.
Search history?
What browser history or something?
Oh my God, what?
I mean, it's the same thing as like trying to look through somebody's phone. Like,
they can
just
say
text.
That?
Yeah, no, it's exactly what it is. So it's by doing that, you're showing that you don't trust them or you have self-esteem issues or both.
Or that he's definitely cheating.
Right, yeah. So there's, it's already reasonably. Like a sign of trouble.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of the micro-cheating, I think you, as crazy as it sounds, I think there is like that component if you do start seeing like your girlfriend or your boyfriend liking a ton of posts from the same person and commenting. I mean, wouldn't you be like, what are you doing? If it
right.
wasn't a close friend?
Well, you as a partner should know, okay, I shouldn't be doing this. This feels wrong.
And everyone can see the fact
right.
that it pops up and says, hey, so-and-so liked 10 of her pictures in a row. And the one from spring break 3 years ago. Immediate red flag.
So this is the thing. Now, you... If you're liking posts or sending DMs to attractive people only, that's going to be a problem for your partner, it says here. Really? I find that interesting.
It's the same thing. As he only talks to the attractive models at the bar when we go out. It's the same thing. I'm not suspicious at all. He only talks to the attractive women at the bar.
Just because you love someone doesn't mean you don't stop finding other people attractive. Now,
Is that the comeback?
That's where you got to say. You got to say that.
Well,
honey, I'm not dead. I still got eyeballs. Oh, God.
Whether that's true or not, you know you don't want to hurt someone's feelings.
Right.
Therefore, you keep it to yourself.
Yes. These are rookie mistakes. I don't understand what's going on.
It's the same components of dating that's been going on forever, just at a different platform. Because now it's all just sits there on Instagram pages.
Is reaching out to an ex on social media cheating? I think that's pretty obvious.
Depends on what you send.
What do you mean, what you send? I don't know what communication is.
Like, if you sent you up, it's a lot different than, hey,
Hope things are well.
Hope things are well, like, with your mom and dad.
Oh. Okay.
You know what I mean? It's all the context of where you said, what time did they send the message? That's also
also, why is why are you so interested in mom and dad now? You never wanted to go over to Thanksgiving at their house. What are you interested in that for?
Oh, God.
Is a work wife or work husband? That's a different situation.
I think that's normal for people to have someone they feel closer to at work.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people talk about it. Let me just put it that way.
Well, the other thing is you're engaged at work, and sometimes when you go home, you're both on your devices. And then, you know, you feel like, I think that can be feel like cheating sometimes, too, when you're just sort of like not paying attention to each other. And then what are you both doing? It's like, I don't know. You just sort of...
you're reminiscing about your day with your work husband. Yeah. You should have heard what he said. It was hysterical.
God, he's so funny.
Story.
And he's lost weight. Look at him. Hey, can I show his Instagram?
Wait, never mind. What are all these hearts on your pictures?
And this is my favorite. Listing someone in your contact by a fake name. Is that suspicious to your partner?
Is there a bigger red flag in the book?
But again, why are you going through the phone to notice? That should be the red flag before you even find it.
Yeah,
you could just be borrowing to call someone.
But then you're going through the contacts.
Yeah, I just borrowed your phone.
Good one, Kevin. Try to use that one. Keep that one in the back pocket, just in case.
My phone's dead. I need to call.
I need to make a call.
It's fine.
And I just noted. I just put your while you were sleeping. I put your finger on the phone, so it would open. I hope you don't mind. I know it's 3 o'clock in the morning, but I had to make a very important phone call to my ex's parents to make sure they're okay. All right. Let's check you on the roadways. Here's Lauren Lapka.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Hold on, this is a microphone. Coming up, your chance to rip us off for tickets to go see Casey and the Sunshine Band at the Four Winds Casino. They got a beautiful event space there.
They do.
The Silver Creek Event Center.
Mm-hmm. And they have some great acts.
Yeah. It's a casino, you know. Casinos are good at that.
They know how to do it.
Yeah.
And they put up the billboards when you're driving that way. Like, oh, I got to go see that.
Yep, that's December 28th. So that's good. Like I said before, that's like a good way to go hang out. By yourself, even, or just with someone else, to get away from the family.
Kind of break up the Thanksgiving, Christmas, whole holiday.
Right, because there might be families still at your house. You're like, I got to get out of here. What are we going to do? Oh, yeah, Casey and the Sunshine Band, I got to go.
I already have tickets, sorry.
I do not like when people stay with... I don't stay with people often.
No. Uh-huh.
I don't really like that.
And you don't like when people stay with you?
Yeah. I mean, people have to have a gigantic... They have to have a wing or a separate house for me to stay at their house.
I could totally see that with you.
I
could totally see that.
It's like, no, the couch in the basement's good. No, I got to get a hotel. I should, right? I mean, that's a nicer thing to do for everybody involved, especially me. But then I insist. No, it's okay. I'm allergic to cats. I don't have a cat.
Do you think you're a good house guest?
Oh, yeah, very. Okay. Oh, yeah. I guess. I make the bed. I clean everything up. I'll even do the sheets if something...
That's huge.
If, God forbid, something awful happens. You never know. Anyway, keep listening. Coming up in the next half hour, we got your tickets to go see them. And we got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 minutes. All right, we have in studio with us... I want to talk about this event that's coming up because it's a kind of a unique event.
It is.
Not well heralded yet, and it should be. That is happening in Chicago. And we have got... it's the first annual... Native American Professionals Breakfast. Now, Chicago is a really important city in the history of North American, Native American history, right? Especially after many, many, many people came off of, out of the reservations and decided to, get out back into the cities. Chicago was a big destination at the turn of the century for folks who were doing that. And there were pockets, big neighborhoods actually in Chicago of Native Americans, and mm-hmm. and there still are some. And it's one of those things. It's one of those sociological stories that we continue to sort of lower our eyes about. I think as a culture, as a society, we don't spend the kind of time thinking about, especially here in Chicago and in Illinois, what goes on in the Native American communities that are just, you know, maybe 100 miles away or 200 miles away up in Wisconsin or in Minnesota or points west, the Dakotas. I had the opportunity, and let me just tell the story before we introduce our guests, that there, I had this opportunity a couple of years ago to host a group of kids who were coming in from a reservation in the Dakotas. And I took them down to the television station, to ABC, mm-hmm. and they were on an elevator with me. And for some of those kids, it was the first time they'd ever been on an elevator.
Wow.
On an elevator. And they were teenagers. And they were totally engaged. They were totally interested in what was going on. But they just, you know, they literally just didn't have the opportunity, the means or the opportunity to actually go out and see the things that, that are happening around them and take part in it. And so this, I think, is that's why I wanted to highlight what's happening here. So Andrew Johnson's with us. He's the president of the Native American Chamber of Commerce of Illinois. And Patty Lowe, who's a professor at McGill School of Journalism, right downstairs from us, as
I
a matter
know,
of fact,
yes.
isn't it? It's really funny.
Great school, you know, I might
a,
add.
That was a two-floor commute that you actually had to just make. And you do Native American and Indigenous research at Northwestern. All right, so let me just start with you. I want to start with you, Andrew. Let's talk about, first of all, you are Native American.
Correct. I'm an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation from Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Let's talk a little bit about Chicago and what the sort of how Chicago plays into all of this, too, because Chicago was a place, obviously, you know, during the early years of the United States, it was a trading post, essentially. And mm-hmm. there were a ton of Native Nations in this region, right? And that we still have a number of the hallmarks of that. But then as there was, you know, the Trail of Tears and all those other events that happened, the darker events that happened in American history, as Native Americans were being pushed out west and away from the commerce that was going on, you know, that basically European Americans were doing, as they were pushing these folks away, that Chicago was a bit of a safe zone in some respects and places where they could come back to.
Now, in some respects, what you have in terms of history, that natives were basically removed as of the Treaty of Chicago in 1833. Mm-hmm. There was a small band of Potawatomi that did stay, mm-hmm. were able to remain in this area, but you didn't see an influx of natives until the mid-1950s. You had two federal acts occur. One's called termination, and the other's termed relocation. So with the Termination Act, after World War II, U.S. was heavily in debt. How can we reduce this debt? Well, let's terminate and abrogate all treaties with the Native Americans, terminate the tribes. And on the second part is, where did the natives go in terms of the reserved lands that they had, those? There were, you know, places where nobody else wanted to be. But with the atomic age and the end, where were all the minerals that were needed to support this? On the native lands, the reservations. So let's relocate them. And so you had a tremendous influx into the larger metropolitan areas in the U.S., Los Angeles, San Francisco, of Seattle, Denver, and Chicago was a real terminus because of Route 66. They were promised jobs, healthcare, housing, training, all of that. But once the individuals arrived, there was basically nothing there. Those items weren't available. And so that's where the American Indian Center was started in 1953, really as a support organization.
Up on the north side of the
city. Exactly. So that's been in existence since 1953 mm-hmm. To support the natives here, support each other. And that's where you see the tremendous influx come in during that period. So today in Illinois, there are about 100,000 natives in total. In the greater Chicagoland area, all the collar counties, about 60,000. And in Chicago metro, about 40,000. So quite a vibrant, robust mm-hmm. Community. Here, and we started the Chamber of Commerce to encourage the entrepreneurship that is really a lot of the life of Native Americans. So
it's a way for people to network,
to build their business. We need to start at the student level to get them started thinking about how they can help build themselves up, do things to give back too, and it's done with a Native view, with Native values of giving back, of reciprocity, of integrity, of really providing value to the others. So that's the basis of what we have here, and the way many businesses are throughout the U.S. But we really need to build up our economic base here in the Illinois area, and this is one of the ways that we're doing this. So looking at it in terms of business, of education and employment, and then other government services. So
it's amazing. We were just talking right before we went on the air that there are no federally protected native lands in Illinois or Indiana, but our neighboring states have them, like Wisconsin, Michigan.
Yes. With Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, all of those. So they already have a seat at the table, really, economically and politically. And so we're starting from behind the eight ball to really get out there. And you're seeing much, much more of a of interest, of force, and involvement here now to make sure that we do get there.
Yeah, which is why it's the first annual breakfast, because you're going to plan, I'm sure, to expand and move forward from
Absolutely. And like I said, we wanted to include the education government. We have a professor of entrepreneurship who is going to be speaking with us from a government standpoint. Senator Susie Glowiak-Hilton, Alderman Brian Hopkins are going to be there. And then Janelle Ford, Commissioner or Director Janelle Ford of the state's Central Management Services will be there to speak too, along with her other people from her organization, and then a couple of Native entrepreneurs. So we really want to get that message out that there is support, there is interest, and
there could be a building of an economy here.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Patty, let's talk a little bit about the idea, because I know you've done a lot of work and you're a journalist and all the documentarian, about also encouraging young Natives to come that may be still in the reservation system to be able to feel safe coming into the economy as a whole.
Right.
Because the suicide rate, this is one of the most astounding numbers.
Heartbreaking.
The suicide rate on federal reservations for Native Americans, 17 times higher with teenagers than it is nationally.
Right.
17 times higher. Alcoholism rate, drug addiction rate, all those kinds of things, also exponentially higher.
But it's not limited to reservations. I think, you know, Andrew, you just described the present situation so well. We have this visibility problem. Most people don't know that there are 100,000 plus Native people in Illinois. We don't have any federally recognized tribes. There's when you talk about Native people in Chicago, people will say, There are Indians in Chicago. Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
And something that people don't understand is that 80%, almost 80% of Native people now live off their reservations. So, you know, 75% of us are living in cities, and some of those same social problems, suicide being one of them, now, if not the leading cause of death of young Native people, close to it, that's not a problem that's just reservation-based. That is happening in the cities, too. And so if we are serious about bringing and encouraging young Natives to come to cities like Chicago, attend universities like Northwestern, we have to make sure that we have support structures or, you
right.
know, we're being really irresponsible.
To the point I was trying to make at the beginning, you know, you have a bunch of kids who are just as smart and acclimated to American culture through media as anybody, but they just don't, but they literally haven't been in a dynamic living environment like this. And in some cases, some of these reserve lands, I mean, it's just above squalor, really, for, you know, some of the housing stock, and the federal investment has been shameful here. I mean, all the money that we spend on everything else, it's amazing to me. And I know that the argument is, well, give them a casino. right? Isn't that, that's, you hear that from the business community and sometimes from the political community. Right. Well, this is what we'll do. And sometimes the tribal councils can, you know, there's been corruption on some of these tribal councils throughout the years. And it's a little hard to tell, you know, who you're
probably
actually doing
no
business
more
with.
Than it exists in mainstream America.
No. Oh.
Great point, Matt. Excellent point.
I would, of course. Yes. But no, it still has been saying. There, you know, and that's, and they, you know, and they found that, in, especially on the East Coast, especially when they're letting casino licenses, right?
Yeah,
right. All of a sudden, a guy who's 164th pops up and goes, hey, look, and they, I could be your tribal elder, right? And that, you can't.
Yeah.
Patty, can I ask you about education as well? Because I think the Native American experience, I know, was fairly glossed over when I was in school,
right.
And it wasn't really a truth-telling experience, and you learn later that, you know, here's kind of how things were, and maybe that was too brutal to introduce to kids at too young of an age. I don't know, but I'm wondering if we're doing a better job of communicating to our kids. And I know you're an educator; you've written books as well, and a documentarian, as Ro
and books for
out.
Kids too in schools.
So how does that work now? Is it are we doing a better job of that?
Well, you know, one of the this is something that is really important to me. And during my summers, I work with tribal teens and try to teach them digital storytelling and address some of the things that that you mentioned. Let's give them some opportunities to, if they choose to, go off reservation or
right.
else learn and bring those technologies back to the reservation and build capacity there.
Right.
But, you know, as I understand it in Illinois, and I've only been here for 2 years, Andrew, you've been here longer, there is very little about Native people in the curricula in Chicago schools. And when they are discussed, they're usually discussed as historic figures, and then they kind of drop out after the fur trade. And I think it's really important when children learn about Native people that they see them not just as historical figures who were certainly important in the evolution of the way things happened on this continent, but also that they're dynamic. And I think this is what you're trying to do, Andrew, with trying to present a different facet of Native life, one that's dynamic and contemporary and innovative. We didn't get to where we are today because of generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
We survived because of generational joy and ingenuity and innovation. And so I think these sorts of things are important too, and I think that's what you're doing.
Which need to be embraced, which
right.
is, I think, one of the
exactly.
issues that we're talking
right.
when we're talking about sociological and psychological issues with kids, is that there's so much, especially in the reserved lands, which is, you know, they may be living in a home that's 30 miles away from the end of the reserved lands, right?
Right.
They never get off the reservation in the sense of ever being outside the sort of the string wall, if you will, of
right.
that. And I noticed that in northern Michigan, right? And or the upper peninsula of Michigan, and that people, which is probably the closest large to, or maybe central the upper peninsula of Michigan probably is the closest of those large areas. And you just, you know, you want to encourage especially the young kids to be able to come down. And it's not necessarily, and I think there is a little bit of reservation about in their minds about the idea of doing it and maybe leaving behind, right? Isn't there a sense, you know, family commitment and things like that?
Yeah, but I mean, not all reservations are like that. Go to the Oneida Reservation in northern Wisconsin outside of Green Bay. It's very progressive, and the quality of life there is wonderful. The education system is wonderful. They have great, their tribal council has invested in a wonderful clinic and dental care. And I mean, it's as nice of a community as you'd find everywhere. So, you know, when you're talking about 573 different federally recognized tribes, the experience is very different.
Right.
And we have, what, how many hundreds of different diverse tribes represented here in Chicago?
Over 125 different tribes represented here in the Chicago area. So it is quite a melting pot, quite a multi-tribal area. And that's one thing to understand about Natives, too. It's not a homogeneous group.
Right. No one is, actually. There is no such thing, right?
Boy, it's something. When you, you know, when you meet one Native American, you've met one Native American.
That's a good way to put it.
Even when we get together, two natives in a room, room, you're going to have three opinions.
Even from the same tribe.
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder what Thanksgiving is like.
Well, we've run out of time for this. But again, the Native American Chamber of Commerce of Illinois is hosting this event, the first annual Native American Professionals Breakfast, connecting business, government, education, and employment. It's going to be at the University of Illinois Chicago Student Services Building, which is 1200 West Harrison Street, Conference Room B and C. It is in 2 weeks, November 19th, Tuesday, November 19th. And if people want tickets or registration, you go to nacc-il.org. That's so Native American Chamber of Commerce, NACC-IL. All right. Or you can just look at it that way. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
appreciate
both.
You spending time with us.
Thank you so very much.
Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roadways?
Right now. Call number 19, 312-981-7200. With a pair of tickets to Casey and Sunshine Band. Live Saturday, December 28th, Silver Creek Event Center, Fort Wayne, New Buffalo. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. Your entertainment escape.
Nice hitting the post there.
I did everything I could possibly do. We got the news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, too.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. You say so. Checking in at
number five.
All right. So a video surfaced of Amy Robach from ABC News complaining on a hot mic, open mic moment, that the network had quashed her Jeffrey Epstein interview. Yes. Not with Jeffrey Epstein, but with a key accuser of Jeffrey Epstein.
A couple years ago this was, yeah.
Right. Who was a person that apparently had been involved with British royalty by way of Jeffrey Epstein, right?
Named Prince Andrew.
Prince Andrew in a can. And she said this, and this was picked up by Project Veritas. That's the group that, you know, does mostly conservative media, kind of where they, you know, they go after the liberal media for trying to show how the liberal media is biased and all that. But they found this and they put it out, and now ABC News has to respond.
I've had the story for 3 years. I've had this interview with Virginia Roberts. We would not put it on the air. First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story. Then the palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. We were so afraid we wouldn't be able to interview Kate and Will, that also quashed the story. And then Alan Dershowitz was also implicated in because of the planes. She told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything.
Wow.
Pretty remarkable, you know, to say something like that. She says it was a private moment of just frustration that she was, obviously she didn't intend that to go public. But I think it says a lot that she was concerned about the Kate and Will interviews and that the network seemed to push back on that of the story because of that. That doesn't seem right.
Here's more.
It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton, we had everything. I tried for 3 years to get it on to no avail, and now it's all coming out, and it's like these new revelations, and I freaking had all of it. I'm so pissed right now. Like, every day I get more and more pissed because I'm just like, oh my God, what we had was unreal. Brad Edwards, the attorney, 3 years ago saying, there will come a day where we will realize Jeffrey Epstein was the most prolific pedophile this country has ever known.
Wow.
Had she exposed it then, too, you wonder if other victims would have been saved. I don't know. Would have things that he was doing been stopped? The scrutiny of ABC News in 2020 or their platform certainly could have done that. But it isn't just ABC. You've seen this with NBC as well. You saw Ronan Farrow complain that he had all the Weinstein goods and that he had to go to another news organization in order to
get it done.
And so he went back and said that he believes that Weinstein threatened his network, NBC, at the time, so that there seemed to be this ongoing narrative that very powerful people who are influential are influencing the coverage. And maybe they're doing that through threats and intimidation. You know, you're not going to get Will and Kate. You're not going to get this, or I have something on your people, was what he alleged with Weinstein. I know things about people who work for your organization. Kill the story, or I'll reveal that. it just is unsettling.
The whole thing is
unsettling.
Bad. I mean, there's a corruption across the board here in terms of and you know, you talk about quid pro quos and all that. And this in no way forgives, you know, what goes on in Washington. I'm not trying to say that public corruption is okay and media corruption is not okay, but when media corruption exists, that's got to be called out too.
It does.
And it's got to be addressed. And when you've got a situation where there's a, listen, if it's a story, if it's a celebrity story, it's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it's a, you know, they, if, and that happens all the time.
Yeah. You know, the entertainment arms of those networks pay for interviews, for instance. And
right.
They tend to be rather glossy and that facts are left out. But you kind of get what they are when they're just a sit down with a celeb. This is different.
This is a crime story. Jeffrey Epstein was a criminal, and he was
a horrific crime.
And he was a criminal who was hobnobbing with the most powerful people in America and perhaps dragging them into his criminality. So now the question is this. Does this finally, now that it's come out this way, does this story finally make air? Does Amy Robach's investigation make air?
The network has said we continue to investigate his actions and have reported on it since, but not in this way. You know, the sort of the reaction when the news broke, but elsewhere.
Yeah, I know. It's a funny thing because we've all had this in our careers. We've had bosses who are like, I don't, you know, what are you talking about?
I've had that issue when I was trying to talk about false confessions over 10 years ago. People didn't believe that anyone would confess to a crime that they didn't commit. And it was hard to even make that case in a newsroom years ago. I mean, we knew about John Burge, but we started to see other instances of that didn't seem to involve torture. They just involved intimidation. And look, now we accept that happened.
I'll never forget in 2006, I was at CNN and I was on a talk show there, and they were talking about politics in America. And I said, you got to watch this one thing out of Illinois. This Barack Obama, he's a U.S., you know, new U.S. senator.
They pronounced his name wrong,
right?
Back then.
And I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a guy to watch. I'll never forget this moment.
Uh-huh.
And the host of the show goes, you're boring me with this. Who cares about some guy in Illinois? I will never forget that moment. And I'm like, ah, well, see what happened.
Keep an eye on him.
Yeah. All right. Checking in at
number four.
Mitch Trubisky addressed the media before practice at Hallis Hall earlier today and says, I am not paying attention to any of this noise outside.
I'm trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off because you got too many people talking on TV about us and what they think about us, what we should do, what we are and what we're not. But they don't really know who we are or what we're capable of,
or
what we're going through, what we're thinking. It's just the outside viewers looking in. And, so, yeah, tunnel vision, earmuffs, and just come to work every day and try to get better and get back to what we're capable of doing.
Oh, no, he's like a 10-year-old. Oh, no, this is worse than I thought. You know, at least Jay Cutler was an adult that didn't care.
He would blow you off.
Right.
Like, I don't know, whatever.
This guy's 12, and he cares, and we're worried now.
This is the same messaging you heard from Matt Nagy, though, by the way. Exact same messaging
earmuffs.
Points. Earmuffs, everybody.
Earmuffs.
Blinders, earmuffs.
This is like Big. This is like the movie Big. This is like if somehow a 12-year-old now has become the quarterback of the Bears.
Oh, God, I want him to be good so badly.
He's going to have to go. He's going to have to go find that, you know, the genie in the box or whatever the hell that thing was.
Genie in a box?
Well, you know, from Big, whatever that thing was. It was, you know, the Wisher, you know, where you go and you make a wish to a genie that's in a big,
oh,
you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that thing.
Fortune teller kind
Yeah, big
thingy.
Fortune teller deal, yeah. So you have to go find that so you can go back to being a 12-year-old and we can find out. Without a first-round pick, by the way, I might remind you that even if the Bears tanked, we do not have a first-round pick.
Was that the Khalil Mack trade that we got rid of that?
Mm-hmm. Wait, there's... All right. Mitch talking about high school.
Yeah, I talk to my high school coaches every week, so it's usually they're just checking on me, see how they're doing. They check on me to see how I'm doing, and we just stay in contact because we have a really close relationship.
Right, because I really am 14, and this is the problem. The problem is this, that I was supposed to be on their team this year. I was actually going to be on the junior varsity, and now I'm in this big guy's body, and I got a mustache, and I don't know what to do.
I was a shoe-in for prom king. I know, really. Can we go back to that? Oh.
Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, here's the coach.
you try to find every answer that you can, and you stay as positive as you can. And I think that's the beauty of all this. There's a silver lining. There really is. And people can say it's cliche and they can say it sounds good, but I fully and all my heart believe that. And I don't know when it's going to happen. It's somewhere. It's somewhere. And when you finally knock it down and you figure it out and you get it, then you're going to say, okay, I see. Now, I couldn't tell. I was in the weeds then. I couldn't see it. But somewhere there's a silver lining in this whole story.
Okay. Hope is not a strategy. I just want to say that. It's not. I mean, listen, I'm all for hope.
But they have to be positive, don't they? I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you see it. I don't know the way out of this mess, but positivity is going
to
help.
You're not getting paid to know the way out of this
That's
mess.
That's true.
That guy is. That's the difference.
It's frustrating not hearing what they're really working on to solve the problems. They're just like, we don't really know. We're kind of just working to be better. How? How are you doing that?
You don't know who we are, what we're capable
right,
of. I think we do.
Like,
yeah.
We're feeling good. We're feeling positive. That doesn't make me feel positive at all.
I want them to be good.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of being on an airplane. And you look outside, and the wing's on fire.
Oh.
Right?
And the pilot.
And the pilot is...
Yeah, they talk to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you notice, look on the left side of the aircraft, you might notice that the wing is completely engulfed in fire. And we really have no idea what to do about it. But we're hoping that maybe over the next 5 to 10 minutes, it just goes out by itself. I just called my flight instructor, who...
from high school.
Told me that... That's unusual, and that it's unlikely it's going to go out by itself. But again, there's always hope. We know you have a lot of options when you fly. Like, thank you for flying with us today.
If you ever fly again,
good luck and pray for us all.
Okay,
it's a bit like that. It really,
that's
is
exactly what it's like.
Really,
all right,
is.
We'll get to your 3, your 2, and your 1. But first, Lauren Lapka, what's happening on the roadways?
Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy is the name of the show. It's Saturday at 9 a.m. on WGN-TV.
Top 5-5 continues.
Number 3.
So this is Dr. Phil. Familiar with him?
Remember him.
He's been on the TV. His advice doesn't
I feel your pain.
His advice doesn't always work.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Have you verified that?
I have been able to verify that.
Personally?
Yes. His advice does not always work.
Okay.
He's got a lot of advice.
Oprah liked him a lot.
She did. She made him famous. I think she might want that one back. There's a couple she wants back.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Oz, who during sweeps always has a Petri dish filled with poop.
I know. He always talks about poop. It's a little too much sometimes. I like Dr. Oz.
And then you take the worm out and you look at it. Like, uh-oh. Oh, my God. Oh, what is that?
And then that one author that lied, I think she wants that one back, too.
Yeah. Oh, the guy from A Million Little Pieces?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, go Big Red. All right, so that is the point of Dr. Phil here for number 3, which is, on a recent show, he launched into what can be described generously as a factually inaccurate tirade about the horrors of marijuana.
When you smoke marijuana, it's like opening your computer up and pouring water inside. A lot of things short out, and it connects where it's not supposed to. And really creates problems. And this isn't my opinion. This is hard, solid scientific research.
Okay. Well, yeah, it does. I mean, he's not 100% wrong about that. I mean, it does change your neural pathways a little bit. So everything does. Alcohol does. Everything does.
Uh-huh.
Dude, you don't understand. Horse, barn, gone. Where's the horse? It was just in the barn. What happened to the horse? It's gone. You people need to understand. This marijuana is like me sticking my finger in your inbox. Horse is gone.
He needs to talk to some 13-year-olds.
Yeah. What were you thinking? What were you thinking? Checking in at
number 2.
George Michael's posthumous single, This Is How We Want You to Get High, will appear over closing credits in the upcoming Last Christmas. Coming to a theater near you, Mr. Richard Roper will be here on Friday to tell us if that's worth seeing. That's got the mother of all dragons in it.
Daenerys.
Mm-hmm.
Amelia Clark?
Yep.
Is that her singing in that commercial for real? Because she has a really nice voice, if so.
If she can sing as well, I mean, wow.
I know, it's just not fair when people like her, who are super cool and nice
right.
and funny and really good at acting, are also really good at singing.
And can tame a dragon.
Right.
Right. I give birth to a dragon.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. No, she just sat on the eggs or something. What did she do?
She didn't sit on the eggs.
No, so she walked into the fire is like...
okay, whatever.
She cannot
lose
catch
his mind.
Fire, and then they were born from the eggs and the fire.
All right. The Bittersweet Song was recorded during Michael's final studio sessions. It's about a father. It's a dysfunctional family in which the father was a drinker and a toker, observing how parents can influence their kids' bad lifestyles. There is no end to taking advantage of dead celebrities.
I know.
Is there?
How can you do a whole movie over one song? Right? Isn't that what the premise is? Last Christmas?
Yeah. I mean, it's about the idea. It's a Christmas love story movie.
Huh. Like Love Actually?
Yes. Basically, it's...
They're trying to rip that one off.
That's the whole idea. And it's this girl. She's got all these problems. She's a drinker, and she's got people in her family who are more successful than she is, and she doesn't know how to deal with herself. And she's just kind of lovelorn. And then all of a sudden, the guy from Crazy Rich Asians shows up and falls in love with her.
So they picked an underachiever in Amelia Clark to play that
right,
role.
Exactly what they did. All right? Okay.
All right.
There you go.
So it's making sense now.
Right, yeah. And then they go skating, and then they have to run away in their skates.
Well, you have to skate in a Christmas movie.
Sure. That's what it says. But it's all based on George. And again, where's George Michael's estate going? I mean, that's the thing. It's crazy that they're doing the same thing with Whitney Houston. Don't get me started. We can talk about that later.
Number one.
When a five-year-old called 911 to order a Happy Meal in Arizona, the Mesa police officer came to the rescue. The five-year-old child, identified by Mesa Police Department as Charlie, dialed 911, asked the dispatcher if he was calling McDonald's.
Hello, 911.
Hi, is this McDonald's?
McDonald's?
Yes, is this McDonald's?
No, this is the Mesa Police Department. Do you have an emergency?
Can I get one with Happy Meal?
A Happy Meal?
Who is this?
Hey, this is Anthony.
No!
Hello? Hey, this is Anthony with the Mesa Police Department. We received several calls from this location. We just wanted to confirm that there was no emergency.
I don't know. The kids must have had the phone.
Yeah. It was, he kind of made my day. Hey, was that your son?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was asking me if I was McDonald's and if he can get a Happy Meal.
Oh, hell.
Oh. Desperate times require desperate measures.
I like the dad. Oh, hell. What, the cops are coming here now? That's sort of the voice that guy had. So the police arrived with a Happy Meal, by the way, just to let you know. Yep.
Oh.
Yep, a Happy Meal in his hand.
That's a very patient officer, too. I give him credit.
Yeah, I like that. It's a nice story. The dad's like, you're not coming in the house now, are you? Everything's fine in
here.
That's
enough. Right there. Leave the Happy Meal on the stoop and leave.
Yeah, we don't need no trouble around here. All right. Well, coming up on the other side, we got important stuff. I know that's happening. Dr. Lauren Stryker is going to be here to talk about how much screen time is ruining your kids' eyesight and their attention span. That's all coming your way. But let's close this thing up first.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here. One of our favorites, Dr. Lauren Stryker, has just stepped into the studio.
Hi, Dr. Lauren.
Doing triple duty. Just came from a menopause event.
We're trying to see if we can make Ro blush by the conversation off the air.
This wasn't a blushing kind of conference. We were talking about menopause in the workplace, which is a big topic because we're going to be talking about brains in a little bit, baby brains. But, you know, baby brains and menopause brains have a lot in common. And it's actually it's a big area of concern because women, when they're at the peak of their professional careers, are very often in their 40s, and that's when they're going through perimenopause, and suddenly they can't sleep, they can't think straight, they can't remember why they walked into the room, and they don't want to tell their boss that, right?
Because, oh my God, I'm having menopause. Is it possible for me to have?
Manopause.
Menopause. Like same sort of like a chemical thing?
You know, actually, I've done a number of Steve Harvey segments when he was still on the air, and the first Steve Harvey segment I ever did was on menopause.
He's still on every air, by the way.
They see him every day. Right, exactly. Yeah. But the first Chicago segment show. I ever did was menopause, and all I'm thinking is, A, why do they have a gynecologist on talking about menopause, and B, why are we talking about menopause when it's like, no big deal, we should be talking about menopause. But
he actually, didn't want to hear that, I bet.
You know what, it was a good segment. It was just
I'm just confused. I think it's stress. Anyway, that's my problem, not yours. All right, let's start.
No,
first
it could be my problem.
It's true. With the baby brain story, this is interesting. There's a new study out about the amount of screen time that really young children are getting because parents just hand them their iPhones or iPads, right?
Exactly. And not only parents, but one of the big issues is a lot of kids, you know, they're sent off to daycare because their parents are working and you don't know what's going on. And it turns out in a lot of these daycare facilities, it's a whole lot easier to stick these little kids in front of a screen to keep them busy than to interact with them in other ways. So the issue is, as you say, you know, what is this doing to those little brains? And it turns out it has quite an impact. And that's actually not surprising because there's a concept of what we call brain plasticity, meaning how quickly the brain is influenced and how quickly it can change. And the younger the kid, the more the plasticity, which is why it's a whole lot easier to learn a second language when you're 4 than when you're 40 or 50. It's because your brain absorbs that stuff so much easier and changes so much more quickly. But by the same token, you put a brain like that in front of a screen that's doing all kinds of things and you don't really know what the impact is going to be. So this study was taking a look at that. And one of the things they did was they did MRIs of these kids' brains and they saw that there were actual physical changes that they could detect on the MRI in the kids who had a lot of screen time.
That is fascinating to hear because I remember when my baby was 2, that's 5 years ago, that the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended zero screen time because they didn't know how it impacted the brain.
That's right.
And I remember thinking, zero screen time? I don't know a single mom who hasn't at least occasionally said, here, watch Sesame Street just to quiet down for a second or whatever. And now it kind of has gone up to, what, 1 hour or something like that?
Well, no, it depends on the age. American Academy of Pediatrics came out and said up to 18 months, you're still at zero screen time. They do give a little bit of leeway for FaceTime, I guess, to talk to parents who are at work or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Interactive.
But they're saying by, you know, age 2, 3 to 5 or so, you're talking 1 hour a day. And quite frankly, that's not based on anything. It's not like anyone's done some amazing study that shows that everything's fine at 60 minutes and then at 65 minutes, you know, something bad happens.
But our parents plopped us in front of TVs.
They did. But you know what? A TV is also, first of all, different than screen time.
Well, the TVs back in our day. Where they were giving us cancer. I'll never forget that my dad would go, get away from the eye, you gotta be 5 feet back. No, count it off. 5 feet back. Right? I mean, I don't know what it was, but
nobody knew. It was like, you know, X-rays.
Right, cathode ray tube was going to kill us.
Yeah.
But now it turns out it didn't. But
we don't know how smart you would be if you hadn't watched all the TV.
That's an excellent point. Thank you for playing along. But the issue is these are interactive though, right? Because the kids are interacting at 3 years old.
These are interactive. They're very close. And you know, as I said, we have these MRIs that show that it's making a difference. The other thing also is the thing that they looked at specifically in this study, looking at these MRIs, is the myelinization of the brain. The myelinization is basically the coating of the little circuits in the brain, which isn't completely developed in a kid. And that coating is really important because that's what makes your brain circuits move more quickly, be more functional. And it turns out that in these kids that had a lot of screen time, they were not forming myelin as well as kids that didn't have the screen time. And
isn't that the basis for MS?
MS has to do with myelin, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But this, what they were looking at also was what parts of the brain, because you can map out the brain. And they found that it was very specific parts like language, you know, certain learning parts. So while they're still getting new information, the bottom line is now we have objective data. It's not just, oh, it sounds like a bad idea. We have objective data that shows that this is not good for your baby's brain. And nobody really knows at this point just how bad it is and what the long-term repercussions are going to be and, you know, if you can make up for it and all of that. But bottom line is stick your kid in front of a screen.
Why try?
Yeah.
But there's a dramatic development at that age. Is there also some kind of evidence or studies to show even later it can have a
serious derogatory impact.
But Sienna, that's exactly the point, is what they're saying.
No, I mean, if you avoid it when they're young, like a lot of screen time when you're 5 or 7 or 9 or 13, because there was that study in the New York Times had this last week just showing that screen time is growing dramatically in age groups, even like 7 to 12, 12 to 18, that over time it's growing. It's no surprise.
And it's a phenomenal question that nobody really knows the answer to, because it's difficult to study because there's so many other things that impact, of course, on brain development and brain function. But I think we're going to start to see more coming out about it, and it's not going to be good.
Mm-hmm. You got to think of it this way, too. Between the iPhone and the iPad, they're a decade old. Right, the iPhone's a little older than the iPad, but it's a decade that we've been handing these little children. Because you walk into a restaurant, it's interesting. It's good for the restaurant industry because more families go to restaurants now than they used to, because they just hand the child the phone or the iPad, and then they're off to the races. They're quiet for 2 hours or whatever it is, and it's become its own version of back in my day of parenting, you just used cough medicine. That's how you got the kids to be quiet. All right, it's ugly. Hold on, it's bad. You wonder. We don't have that answer here because we don't have a long term throw.
Right.
We can only look at 10 years of data, and you can now look at kids that were 2 or 3 at the time, and they're still under the age of 10.
That's right. And we also, there's a very big difference between a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. There's a big difference between a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. That's what makes pediatrics so challenging and why I didn't go into it. Mm-hmm. That, among other reasons.
Well, yeah.
But
crying children.
But yeah, no, it is very hard to study this stuff. But I think that this particular study is so important because they do have some objective measurements. It's one thing to give a kid a test to see how they're memorizing things and learning, but it's another thing to actually do MRIs and see these physical changes.
Absolutely.
Can I keep you around for a second? Because I want to take a quick break, and then I want to come back, check the traffic and all that. On the other side, I want to ask you this. There's a story that's breaking right now that T.I., the rapper,
It's trending.
He takes his daughter to a gynecologist every year to make sure that her hymen is intact. And how crazy is that? But it turns out that this kind of thing is maybe more common than we hope it is. I don't think it's very common, but there's a whole cultural thing that goes on here that we need to talk about. So let's do that on the other
side.
And
that'll bring people back after traffic for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good tease.
Thank you, Doctor. She's also a broadcaster,
she
too.
Is. She's great.
Look at her. She's always got that. Now you're taking notes. Don't steal anything from me. All right, here we go. Back with Dr. Lauren Strickland. But first, here's Lauren Lapko with the traffic. Dr. Lauren Stryker is with us. She is she's an associate clinical professor at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine.
Professor now.
She's not an associate.
All right, Jeff, get in here. You're fired.
She just demoted her.
Hold on.
Yeah. Hello.
Hold on.
I worked hard for that full professor.
I bet.
Full professor at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine.
Yep.
Obviously people have seen you and heard you on television and radio here for the last decade talking about all these things. And this story that is now trending, just popping up today, BuzzFeed has this story about T.I., who's a rapper and an actor. And you see him in there's some kind of significant commercials that he's in now.
I've never heard of him before.
He's a.
But I trust you on that.
He's kind of common light. Is what he is. He's like he's one of those guys that some ideas institute or some like
they're
ideas
always
festival.
A TED Talk, right?
Right. Yeah. T.I. is a TED Talk guy. He's got the guy who's got the headset on, and he's talking to people about important things. But he's an actor too. He's involved in action films. But he listen to this. This is crazy. Every year he takes his daughter, who is now about to turn 18, but this has been going on since she was a little girl, to a gynecologist to make sure that her hymen is still intact. Now, first of all.
Yeah, where do you start? Great.
Yeah, all right, I'm just going to leave that with you. Take it away.
You know, there are certain things that when I first hear about it, my first impulse is there are no words. There are just... like you said, I don't even know where to start with this. But let's just start with medically, okay, before we get into what father would take his daughter to a gynecologist to have her hymen checked. But if you just even talk medically, first of all, teenagers do not go to the gynecologist routinely because they do not need an exam unless they are having a problem. And I'm assuming that this young woman is not having a problem other than her father.
Her father's the problem.
Her father's the problem. So the idea that he is making sure, submitting her to an unnecessary medical exam, let's start with that, that is completely ridiculous. I'm not even going to get into the gynecologist who's agreed to this whole thing. But even the notion that you can examine someone and guarantee that they are a virgin is ridiculous. Because when I've spent a lifetime looking at hymens, unlike I'm assuming the two of you.
No, and I have not.
And they come in all shapes and sizes. And some women have a very thin, flimsy hymen that they're born with, which is why not everyone has excruciating pain and bleeds when they first have sex. And some women, it is, you know, thicker and there's a smaller opening. But the point is that you can't always visually tell if that hymen has been penetrated. And again, we're just talking medically. We're not getting into the whole other aspect of this. And in addition, when one defines sex, there's a lot of ways to be sexual without having intercourse. So he's really deluding himself if he thinks that this is proving. I mean, I have no idea what his daughter has or hasn't been doing. It's not the point. But this idea that he is proving that she is sexually pure because she has an intact hymen is absolutely ridiculous.
He was even in the interview. He said, though, the doctor told me there are other ways that the hymen can be broken: horseback riding, bike riding, stress.
Right, but she doesn't have a horse or a bike.
And that's what he said. He said, "Well, she doesn't do any horseback riding, so just give me the results and tell me what they are."
Yeah,
was his
response. And then the other thing that was pointed out in this BuzzFeed article is that the doctor said, "Well, I can't talk to you unless I have her permission," which is true. But you cannot ask a daughter's permission when her father is sitting a foot away from her. What is she going to say? You know, if I'm seeing a minor and I need to get the permission to speak to the parent, I get her alone and say, "Can I share this information with your parent?" But quite frankly, if a parent brought their daughter to me and said, "I would like you to examine her to tell me if her hymen is intact," I would decline to do so and not even get involved in any way.
Does the girl have any rights in that point? If you're 16, can you say, I don't want to have an exam, or I don't want my parents to know the results of the exam?
Yes, actually, it varies from state to state, but Illinois law has what they call emancipated minor status. And what that is specifically if someone needs an exam or a medical procedure that is specifically related to contraception, sexually transmitted infection, pregnancy, that they are allowed to do so without their parents' permission. So when I see...
At 16, is that right?
Any age. I think, it might be like 11, 12, but certainly it's 16. It's a teenager.
Yeah.
And so when I see a teenager, and I always tell the parent, this is a confidential relationship, and I will not be talking to you about the results of this exam without your daughter's permission. And then when I get the daughter alone, then I'll say, is this something you want me to share with your mom and this? And sometimes they say, sure, absolutely. I tell her everything. And sometimes they say no. And the only time that law isn't as in place is if you think someone's been abused or if it's a life-threatening condition or something such as that. But to ask the young woman in front of her father kind of doesn't count. It's like if you think a woman's being abused and she's in the room with her abuser, it's very difficult to say to the woman, "Are you being abused?" Mm-hmm. You got to get rid of the guy first. So this is just wrong on every level, but not to mention, oh my God, this poor woman growing up with this father who is so narrow-minded.
Controlling every part of her.
And I don't know if he has a son or not, but I sure wonder if he's what he's doing with his son and having him inspected genitally, every year.
He acknowledges this, that on her 16th birthday, the night of her 16th birthday, after everybody went to sleep, he put a post-it note on her bedroom door that said, "Gyno, 9:30 in the morning," on her 16th birthday.
Ouch.
I mean,
that's horrifying.
And obviously what he's trying to do is to
control her.
Control her and to keep her from having sex.
Okay.
And parents, we all have our ways of doing that.
Right.
There are other ways, aren't there?
I want to hear my way.
Yes.
That actually worked for a while. And now my daughters are all grown up, so I can, you know, they know about my way. But when they were about 15 or 16, I just looked at them and I said, by the way, I'm a gynecologist. And as a gynecologist, I have special powers, so I will know when you are having sex.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't take it any further than that. And they just both nodded.
Isn't one of your daughters a sex therapist?
Now she is, yes.
Yeah. Do you think that she brings that up and when she, like, is therapizes people? Hey, you had a trouble? Let me tell you something. No, my mother used to do.
But they believed that for a while. And later on, you know, at some point, I forgot when, you know, one of them said to me, could you really know? And I'm like, no, how would I know? I just told you that.
Wow.
But the idea of taking them to, oh my God, you know.
So mild threats and intimidation are okay. Is that what you're saying?
You know, mild lying.
Yeah. Deception. Parental deception.
Parental deception.
It's the same thing. You know, the FBI uses that all the time. We told you that you're a co-conspirator, already admitted to everything. Uh-huh. Right? I mean, that's you know,
listen, I knew one of my friends, she told her teenage daughters that there were secret cameras located at various spots throughout the house.
Oh, that's God. Believable.
Well, that's actually very believable now. All right. Dr. Lauren Stryker, thank you so much. Full professor at Northwestern University's Fund. School of Medicine. Thank you so much. We've got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2.
Chicago's very own WGN.
And now, the Rokon Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokon.
It's a Rokon Show with Anna DeMarcus,
yes,
of course.
It is.
And it's News or Ruse. We have our old friend, Dr. Bill Miller, is with us. He not only puts people to sleep, he also makes them laugh. Sort of on the way down, I think. I'm not quite sure exactly how that works. He's a comedian, and he's an anesthesiologist. And he's an anesthesiologist, and he's a comedian. He's been on the program before, and he's going to be here to be our professional celebrity consultant. If you would like to play, 312-981-7200. And Bill is also here to tell us about a very important thing. At Zany's, they are doing the John Fox Memorial Comedians Fund event on Wednesday, November 13th. So that's 2 weeks from tonight.
It's 1 week from tonight. It's next Wednesday.
1 week from tonight. That's right.
The event is called Comedians Helping Comedians. We started a fund. John Fox was a road warrior, great comedian, you know, originally from Chicago. And, you know, he worked like he basically led a rock star life, but a comedian's income. So he lived from gig to gig, didn't have a lot of money. He ended up getting sick, got colon cancer, and passed away because he never had a chance to get a checkup, never had any money. So I started this fund to help comedians. So now it's a general health welfare fund for comedians, you know, on an individual basis. If a comic, let's say he's a middle act, he's working, trying to get from gig to gig, his tire breaks down or he has a sore throat and can't afford health insurance, you know, we can come to this fund and on a case-by-case basis, we'll evaluate it and help give them the help that that they need.
That's nice.
That's really great.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, the comedy life, I mean, in some cases, it doesn't get rougher. I think only the people in the carnival and circus world that have it rougher in terms of, and because these guys, men and women, are generally on their own. Right?
Yes, they're totally
traveling. You know, they're getting on a plane, they're going to whatever the next thing is, or getting in a car earlier in their career. But once they, even those really, you know, the people who have the specials, right, that you see, because Netflix now, thank God for Netflix, there's 500 comedians on Netflix, but there's a lot of people, they're not the Maniscalcos, but some of the other ones, also great, but, you know, they're flying gig to gig to gig to gig.
Right.
They're doing, you know, they're staying in these hotels. The comedy clubs don't necessarily put you up in the best hotels. You're paying your own expenses, and they're not taking very good care of themselves.
Right, and it used to be that they would fly you in and put you up, give you a car.
They don't do
now,
that?
No, now, I mean, unless you're the very, very top elite, like you're saying, the Maniscalcos and the
Filling up the United Center.
They're filling up, you know, major center. Those guys are totally different ballpark. But the rest of the working comedians, guys that work comedy clubs all around the country, they have to get there.
Yep.
You know, so there's not a lot of money that you would think. I mean, Wall Street Journal did a thing talking about comedians' incomes, and you'd be surprised at how low they are. Like an opening act, if they're working a lot, they're making $10,000 a year. You know, that's not a lot of money. A middle act is not making much more than that. And a headliner, someone who you haven't heard of but does the job well at all these comedy clubs, they're not making six figures.
Right.
So if they get hurt, if their family gets sick or something happens.
They don't have insurance. There's no union to cover that unless they're working other gigs.
Exactly right. There's no union. There's no retirement fund. You know, they're living week to week. So John Fox was one of those guys who never had any health insurance and never got his colonoscopy. So when he finally got diagnosed, you know, his hemoglobin was so low he had stage 4 colon cancer. And then I went, you know, and I know the guy for a long time, great guy. So I started this fund in his name.
All right.
So we need the support. Please come out next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday night at the Zanies downtown, 1548 North Wells Street, ChicagoZanies.com for all details. And is there, there's a GoFundMe too, right?
Correct.
Comedians, it's GoFundMe. It's comedians-helping-comedians.
Correct.
All right. Well, I just Google it and somehow it'll work
you'll
out.
Get there.
Google it, you'll get there.
As we like just, to say, just Google it.
Google Zanies.
All right, you ready to go here? Here we go. We're going to play a little news or ruse. Greg and Kim are going to start with us. Here's let me tell you what you're playing for. This is a big deal. Winner gets a $75 gift certificate to Green Tea Home Services for all your home service needs, including garage door maintenance, air duct purification system, or carpet cleaning. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA or greenteaservices.com. And everybody gets a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations. For everything Christmas, visit treetime.com or their Christmas showroom on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. All right. Here you go. Are you ready? Let's start with Greg and Kim. Greg and
Kim. Come on, Kim.
All right, Greg, you there? You good?
Yep.
You solid? You ready? Here's your first headline.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Florida farmer not selling exotic animal meat. Alligator lawyer tells court.
Oh, it's Florida. It's alligators. I would say it's got to be news. What do you think?
News. Alligators, Florida. I'm with you.
Okay, they have, the writers got it.
Yeah,
the writers are so
How
good.
About
they figured that out. There's always a tell, though, that the headline is not what a headline writer would write. All right,
and you always use Florida.
Yeah, I know, Greg.
That's the hook.
All right, Alan and Lauren. Greg's gonna be a problem. Yep. Alan and Lauren, here is your headline.
Man wearing "It's not a crime unless you get caught" shirt gets caught on security cam committing a crime. I would definitely think that's news. What do you think, Alan?
I would agree.
You got it.
All right, that's very good. All right, Mike and Dr. Bill Miller, here is your headline. Umpire claims South Carolina mayor had him fired over kickball call. Mike, what do you think?
South Carolina kickball, that sounds like news to me.
Dr. Bill?
Okay, I'll go with you. If you feel it, let's do it.
There you go.
Well done.
All right. Back to Greg and Kim.
All right, Greg.
Okay,
here we
Greg,
go.
Kim,
redeem ourselves. I can tell. All right. Vladimir Putin calls for reliable Russian version of Wikipedia.
Boy, I don't know about that, Kim. What do you think?
Last time, but I feel like that could be news.
You think it could be news?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, go with your gut, because I led you down the wrong path the last time.
Oh, boy. Let's go news.
All right. You did it.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. All right, Ellen and Lauren, here's your headline. Japanese hotel chain. Sorry that hackers may have watched guests through bedside robots.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I sadly think this might be news, too.
Ellen?
Well, I would have to agree.
Woo! Now they're on a roll.
Well done, Mike.
All right,
and Dr. Bill, here is your headline. New Zealand man on holiday in Australia floods apartment in bid to get rid of sex worker. What is that?
It sounds too fake to me, but then again, it is New Zealand, Australia, but I'm going to say ruse.
I don't agree with you, but I'll go with you. I think that's news. I think anything can happen.
Well, then, you know what? Then I'll go with you, Dr. Bill. We'll go with news.
Okay.
I mean, he is a doctor.
Look at that. That is pulling one right out of the clutches of defeat right there. Well, all right. Stand by, everybody. Hold on. We'll come right back. We'll find out the definitive answer. We're going to start just to stay in the game. Greg and Kim are going to answer a question here, and God knows what's going to happen. Because I can tell right now Greg's been drinking. All right, let's check in now with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roadways?
Ben Bradley investigates one of the biggest reasons so many murder cases go unsolved in Chicago, getting away with murder. WGN TV News tonight at 9.
We're playing News or Ruse with Dr. Bill Miller. He's a comedian and he's an anesthesiologist. And he's also the guy who put together a fund, which is a very important fund for comedians. There's a big fundraiser happening a week from tonight at Zany's downtown, Zany's Chicago, on Wells Street, just south of North Avenue. And it's for $20, you're helping out this fund. You come in, give them $20, and you're going to help out doctors or comedians who are helping comedians with medical issues, right? Is that the best way to put it?
Medical issues and general health and welfare issues. They have a problem. They can't get to a gig. Car breaks down. We may help them, you know, fix the car to get to the gig. They need health care for their family. We'll do that. There's going to be about 15 comedians from national headliners all the way to new guys that are coming out that are going to benefit from this fund. So please come out.
All right. That's excellent.
Good idea.
All right. News or Ruse continues. We start with Greg and Kim, because they only have one right.
Okay, Greg, we can do this.
All right, Greg, here you go. Here is your headline, as read to you by Orion Samuelson.
Thieves do laundry, leave note in Canadian Airbnb break-in.
Oh, Canadians are so nice. I guarantee you that's news. What do you think?
News.
News?
I'm going with you, Kim.
All right. There he goes. There's Greg. There he goes. Yeah.
Wild.
All right. So, yeah, we're still alive, Kim.
Barely, Greg.
I had faith.
Yeah. All right, Ellen.
We're 2 for 3. Come on.
Ellen and Lauren, here is your headline. God help us.
Middle children twice as likely to fall for online scams, a study finds.
Oh. How about that?
Oh, boy.
That's interesting.
Wow. I have no idea on this one. What do you think, Alan?
I'm going to go ahead and guess a ruse, even though it sounds like it's true.
Yeah, this might be one of those trick ones. Okay, you want to go
ruse? That's why I'm pushing ruse.
Okay.
Wait. Oh. That is... I hit both buttons. It is, it is actually...
A ruse.
Yeah,
so it's right.
You got it right.
Way to go, Alan.
Hold on a second. You know, the doctor was just sharing some anesthesiology with me just a few minutes ago, just explaining some things. Try this. It'll work out. All right. Oh, Greg, I'm sorry that didn't work out for you. But you're going to get a desktop tree, which is the most important thing. Pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time. Christmas creations for everything Christmas. TreeTime.com or their Christmas showroom on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. All right. Here we go. And this is to stay in it. Otherwise, Ellen and Lauren win. Mike and Dr. Bill, here is your headline.
Gators have taste for Florida man, according to science.
Another Florida headline.
Oh, Florida Gators.
I think only if the guy plays golf. They always climb up and get the golfer.
I want to say it's news because I can almost see someone living in Florida being foolish enough to get bit by alligators repeatedly. So yeah, I'm going to say I think it's news.
I agree with you, man.
There you go. You stay in it. All right. Here we go. To the lightning round. Here you go. Alan and Lauren, here is your headline. Virginia homeowner stumped by stolen sidewalk.
That's also something I think I could see being news.
Alan?
Let's go ahead and push news.
There we go.
Wow.
All right.
So Mike and Dr. Bill, a surprising number of people are lying about not liking Nickelback, study finds.
You
think that's a ruse?
I agree with you.
I do.
Yeah, that is correct. That's a ruse.
Yes.
Everybody hates Nickelback. All right, here you go. Alan and Lauren, back to you. School ID badges appear to list phone sex line instead of suicide prevention number.
That is true.
Yeah, that is news. I think I read that.
Wow. Back to Mike and Dr. Bill. Florida man accused of robbing bank in Bernie mask protests police report claiming he wet himself after tasing.
Mike and Dr. Bill, there you go.
I think it's news, and if it is, it's hilarious.
Of course it's got to be news.
Oh! Oh! What a
been good, though.
That would have been very good, though. Yes. All right. Thank you very much. Everybody's a winner around here. Dr. Bell, thank you so much for being here, and thanks for what you're doing.
Yeah. Also, thanks for having me.
The young and middle-aged and old men and women of comedy who definitely need our help here. Go to zanies.com for information, or GoFundMe, Comedians Helping Comedians. You can just Google that, and it's all right there. And Dr. Bill Miller is with us, who's not just an anesthesiologist. He's an anesthesiologist by day, but then he makes you laugh at night. And there's got to be a laughing gas joke in there, but it seems too cheap and too easy for me.
There is, and I won't tell it.
Yeah, okay. All right, thank you. I appreciate it, Doctor. Thanks for being here.
Thanks
all right,
for
coming
me.
Up on the other side, we have the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom that we're going to be taking you to. And then we also have John Seidel from the Sun-Times, got a new book out called Second City Sinners. I'm going to see if I have actually found myself into that book. We'll find out about that coming up right after. It's Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis,
yes,
right here on
is.
720 WGN. All right, John Seidel is with us from The Bright One, the Chicago Sun-Times.
How are you?
It's been a long time since anybody's been able to say that. You got a book out called Second City Sinners. Now, what I immediately did, they just handed me a copy.
Yeah, you just thumbed through it real quick?
Yeah, literally the last 20 seconds, and I'm going back here and I'm looking at he's got an index.
Okay.
Which is good. Because
right,
an index
helpful.
Is a very, so I'm in the C's right now, the index. I'm just making sure that I am Chicago, Cook County. Hold on. O'Connor, Julia Connor. Okay. And Jim Colosimo. All right.
So they skipped over you.
Colosimo.
Saving it for the sequel.
Yeah. All right. That's very good. And I'm going to look at some other letters here as I look around here. I'm going to see what, the Volstead Act. That's a good one. Let's see. All right. Now, this, I love the idea of this, because there's one of the things I think I adore most about Chicago is the grimy side of Chicago. I think that's
current grimy or the historic
well,
grimy?
Well, you know, if you look at the historic grimy into where the current grimy is, it's connected in a lot of ways.
That's true.
There are you can draw a direct line from the Capone era, although we were just talking about this with the death of Joy the Clown Lombardo, that you can draw a direct line all the way through for the last 100 years in Chicago of, you know, people who, you know, the flow chart. You always see that in those, like, movies, crime movies, and the FBI, they're sitting around, they got a flow chart. They actually do. The FBI office in Chicago has that flow chart. As a matter of fact, the FBI office in Chicago used a picture that was taken at a great now deceased restaurant in the western suburbs,
right.
Slicker Sam's, one of the greatest restaurants, the best clams you ever had and mussels you ever had in your life. Honest to God,
yum.
Just the best. But there was a picture that would hang in that restaurant of these guys that were, it was basically a flow chart of the mob, and they put it up in the restaurant, and the FBI got a picture of the picture.
Just for reference.
Right, and they put it up there, and then they would literally color in the picture for the guys that they put away.
Right, right. Is that that was the Last Supper?
That's what they call that. That's what they call that, yeah.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, and that's why this was so interesting for me to work on as a reporter covering present-day Chicago. I got to spend last year digging through the archives, both through microfiche and just through our physical files, too, to put together some stories, some really old historic crime stories as well, and give me a chance to see some parallels like you're talking about.
If you go back to, like, Dillinger or H.H. Holmes from Devil in the White City, I mean, were the headlines splashier then? Did they cover crime in any different way?
You know, it depends who you were looking at. I focus primarily on the Chicago Daily News as well as the Sun and the Times, basically the predecessors for the Sun-Times, right? And the Daily News, it had kind of a more formal style for most of the time.
It was an evening paper.
Yeah, it was an afternoon paper.
It was definitely for people wearing ties to work.
Sure.
Yeah. It was not a factory gate paper, but, as the Sun was.
Right. And then there were the Hearst papers, and I think especially in the 20s, who really were splashy and kind of had that yellow journalism style. But this book is mostly focused on, I kind of tried to tell the stories as they were told in the Daily News, as well as the Sun and the Times, just to and focus on the writing. Even some of the better known tales I talk about, you know, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre is one that's been written about a lot, right? But the Daily News had great coverage of that on that day, and there was a reporter who actually got into the scene. We'd never be able to get into the scene of that right there that day.
Nowhere near it.
And he wrote this piece about what it was like in there. It was the way it was written. You'd never see that. Unlikely to see it at all in the newspaper, but this ran at the top of the front page above the fold. And so it's just really interesting stuff that I tried to
What did you learn from that one, the Valentine's Day Massacre?
Just sort of the firsthand account?
Yeah, it was the firsthand account, and also the Daily News had a police expert give their idea of what probably happened in that garage that mm-hmm. day again. And so that was kind of the basis. That was the narrative I tried to use in the book.
Isn't that a funny thing, though? Now you stop, you know, flash forward 100 years, essentially. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you watch cable news, and they have the same thing. They have an expert, right? They have military experts or so police experts or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, doing these, you know, guys on their payroll that would explain things. I mean, this has never really changed. So, in that particular circumstance, was that accurate? Because there have been many retellings and different attributes assigned to the St. Valentine's Day massacre.
Right, and so there have been different versions. I feel like this one pretty much hewed with the other versions that I've read. It kind of stood up against, I think, the modern tellings of what happened in there. Yeah,
gang.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The North Side. It was the North Side Irish gang, right?
Mm-hmm. That was gunned down.
That was gunned down by. Yeah. It was Capone's guys. We assume.
That's right? Always been the assumption, and Capone's face was on the front page of the Daily News that day with those articles. I mean, they went straight to him. So I mean, it was all they were all on top of it.
You know, what was interesting was one of the traditions of the ink-stained wretches of Chicago journalism was to at big crime scenes, bloody crime scenes, was to go get their day's newspaper, whatever it was, and dip it in the blood. And then they would have that as the token from that particular incident. The Charlie Johnson, the dad of
Jim Johnson,
the great Jim Johnson, and the grandfather of Alexis Del Cid, all great journalists, like three generations of great journalists. He had the Dillinger one from the Biograph Theater.
That is nuts.
It's a crazy thing, and you could tell. I mean, they got it tested recently because they wanted to go to a museum
because they wanted to put it on eBay or no?
Put it into a museum because it's an important that's part of the legacy of journalism here is that it's also a. You know, it takes a certain kind of person, John. I think you know this, and perhaps you're one of these guys. It takes a certain kind of person to go out and want to get into that.
No, yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, it's interesting, and we talk about it, people who do this job and the effect that it has on you. But you're also, right, while you're dealing with that effect, there's also just, I guess, kind of a thrill of being in the mix of everything and wanting to know more, wanting to get an explanation for the unanswered questions.
And hopefully, and you've done this many times, is getting a scoop and probing even further, contributing to the conversation in a way that breaks through and tells facts that you didn't know about before.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right, that's key. I mean, being able to bring something new to the conversation is what we all want to do. I mean, and in this world where we see lots of kind of the same story being told, I mean, that is really what is driving us, is to bring new facts out.
You know, it's interesting because you have a whole thing in your book about Dillinger and about his escape, right, from Lake County Jail in Indiana and all of that.
Such a story.
With an escape route. I mean, if you are into, like, I see this bus that goes, this trolley that goes by 15 times
tour?
A day down here, right? Well, there's a couple of them. There's a called Crime Tour, there's a Mob Tour,
saw one on my way over.
Yeah. And they go around
popular.
And the spots have a certain thing, you know, where they go, oh, we're going to stop here, and then, you know, we're going to get the Harry Carey's chips, because this is what it's all about.
They might as well make money off our reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it is interesting that there's still such commerce for this. But, you know, again, it ties into what is also happening today. In this book, in Second City Sinners, what is the story that you thought you knew? That when you did it for this book, changed a little bit for you.
It changed a little bit for me. You know, the one that's coming to mind is the Leopold and Loeb case. I guess that I didn't know as much about the Daily News' role in solving that crime, and maybe other people do, but I mean, that was one that jumped out at me. You know, they helped match the typewriter. Nathan Leopold's typewriter, right? From the ransom note, there was a typewritten ransom note. They found a classmate of Nathan Leopold's to give them some of his typewritten notes.
University of Chicago, right? Weren't they? Were they University of Chicago?
Right. Yeah. UOC. And
there you go. That's one for Northwestern. Yeah. Okay.
And go so Cats. They got those notes and they matched them up to the ransom note, and that quickly helped lead to the confession. So there was that, and there were also a couple other stories that I tried to bring out. You know, I talked about the Black Hand, which I don't think it's talked about very often. There's a story about a butcher whose wife goes missing, who I'm not sure that's really been written about before, but that was one story that I wanted to kind of bring out that maybe would be new to some people.
You think about all of these movies have been made about these cases. I mean, they just captivated audiences for years and years, and people want to read about them. How do you weave all these stories together in one book. How was that a challenge?
It was a little bit of a challenge, yeah.
Do you do it like chronologically?
Yeah, I do. So I start out with the Haymarket riot, the Haymarket Affair in 1886. Go on.
That makes it sound nicer than it was.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that was yeah. I mean, there was a.
And the Daily News was right there, wasn't it at the time?
It was. It was nearby. The offices were nearby, and it hadn't been around very long either. And so there was a labor demonstration. A bomb went off. Several people were killed, and then four people eventually hanged in connection with that. And so we go on the murder of Carter Harrison. Let's see who else. H.H. Holmes is in there. Mm-hmm. Talk about the
Carter Harrison was the mayor.
The mayor, yes.
Right.
The
assassinated
mayor.
His own home.
Right.
During the 1893.
At the end of it. At the end of the World's Fair.
World's Fair, right.
And so then we have, let's see.
That was a strange situation, too. Because a guy just showed up at his house, rang the doorbell, and they let him in. And Harrison would apparently take, citizens into his parlor and talk to them about things. I'm assuming he also got envelopes filled with cash. That's, it's the Chicago way. Right. And then he got buttonholed by the guy.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. He did let people come in often, and this time the maid let him in, and he was, the mayor had been in the back taking a nap, and this guy, Patrick Prendergast, decided to just gun him down right in his home. So we have that. We have the women who inspired the Play Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So that's in there as well. And then it ends with the lipstick killer, Bill Herons, and Richard Speck in 1966.
The nurses. Oh, my gosh. Who can forget?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. William Herons. Right.
Is there a Gacy?
We didn't go into Gacy, no. We ended it with Richard Speck.
Because actually, by then, the Daily News was defunct.
It was,
by the time we got to Gacy, right?
Exactly
the Daily News went out in 1978. I think I still have the last edition of it. Because my parents were big Daily News, Tribune in the morning, Daily News at night.
Yeah.
And you had it delivered?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I read all through that last edition where they talked all about their history and and the cases that they'd cover, the putting together the Foreign News Service that they did. It was a really remarkable issue.
And Royko, you remember Royko was in the Daily News.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, it was such a, and I thought that their sports coverage was better. Mm-hmm. It was, I always, with all due respect to our corporate, our former corporate masters here, I always liked the scrappiness of the of that organization, of the field organization, whoever owned that during those times, whether it was the Sun-Times or the Daily News. I just they always had that hey, we're not taking it seriously as the Tribune, and the Tribune is for rich people. We're going to go out and we're going to tell the stories. We're going to go behind the power brokers, because the Tribune sometimes was fainting to the power brokers.
Sure.
That was their belief at the time.
Right.
Not always, it was not true.
Sure.
Love the idea that you had this scrappy number two that was going to take him out. And of course, remember the Tribune had an evening, the Chicago Today, right?
Right.
It was their afternoon paper that eventually became that. And there was a way of, the great competition in this town. And I'm very still proud and happy that Chicago still has two very, very vital.
Yeah, so no question. We're so lucky.
And I think we've talked about it before, just about how this city is just full of great reporters.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Continue to see that.
Can I stop here 1 second? I want to come back and I want to ask you, because you covered Blagojevich as well as anybody.
The Appeal.
The Appeal.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
There is a story that when Donald Trump was in town last week for his fundraiser, he sort of did a straw poll in the Reno, asked, he was addressing the room of
major donors
and power brokers and stuff like that that were in the room with him, and sort of threw it out there into the room, and by applause, who here thinks that we should be pardoning Rob Blagojevich? I want to get your take on that as well, so we'll talk about that on the other side. But first, let's check in now with Lauren Lampko. What's happening on the roadways? John Seidel is with us. Second City Sinners is the book, and of course, John Seidel is a great Sun-Timesman,
but
he's written this book based on the Chronicles of the Chicago Daily News, which to my eye is probably my favorite journalistic enterprise in this city's history. As a kid, that was the first newspaper I watched, go under. Mm-hmm. And even at that point in my home, I don't know, I was 10 years old or whatever I was, my parents made a big deal out of the fact that, a newspaper was closing.
I know. And, they lamented.
And there were, how many newspapers in this town were there? At one point in the early 20th century, I think there were over a dozen.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the total. There were a lot, though. I mean, there was the, at one point, the Trib, the Daily News, the Herald and Examiner, the Inter-Ocean, several others whose names are escaping me now, and of course we're I think we were around four when the Daily News shut down, right? And
yeah
yeah
Yeah, and that was it. Right, exactly. Yeah. Today, I think, was still in operation, right. And then that closed right thereafter.
Right.
All right, let's, or maybe right before. Let's talk about the Blagojevich appeal for a second, because sure. as we mentioned, the president sure. was here last week, and, you know, the group of fundraisers and donors, he talked about the fact that maybe I will pardon this guy, or commute the sentence, at least. Patty Blagojevich has been rather mum recently. Obviously, she's been going on Fox News and trying to get the president's attention for this, at least a commutation, not a full pardon. And what are you hearing about that?
You know, I just think it's interesting that the talk has started again, you know, and we're hearing
like 4 or 5 years left, though, right? I think at this point
he does. Yeah, I think 2024. Yeah. I think is when he's due out. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody got wound up, I think, in August when Trump started talking about it. And I was one of the reporters who wound up outside Blagojevich's prison in Colorado, just waiting just in case. And then when that didn't happen, everything just went silent. Everybody went radio silent. Nobody wanted to talk about it anymore. I think some people were really upset about the way that went down. And now all of a sudden it's back. And you know, we've seen these waves of it, and it's hard to know what to make of it, because it's come up and then it's gone away and then it came up big. And so I think we're all just watching and trying to figure out what Trump might be thinking.
I'm just surprised that everybody was saying that was at that meeting, well, I think it's going to happen within the next day or so.
Well, because the way he made it sound, I talked to someone who was in that room, and they said that there were cheers when they said, should I pardon Blagojevich? And you would think, you know, that may be a crowd that they may not think that way, but apparently they did. He said, well, yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about doing it soon, really soon, was what he said. And it seems obviously very top of mind to him. There are a number of things going on in the country, right? There are a lot of things you can talk about.
Right.
And the fact that that came up, it shows you
that it's still on his mind. And you're right. It hasn't gone away.
I have a different take on this, because I look at it and I think, you know, he's a guy who strikes me as someone who is got a short attention span. And that when he was here in Chicago, he's thinking, what am I going to talk to Chicago about? Oh, yeah, Blagojevich. And then he just, you know, he brought that up because that was like at the top of his mind at that moment as he tried to localize what was going on. And then he gets on Air Force One and he goes back to Washington and everything else that's going on. And he stops and it goes away at the moment. Because I just don't know, with all the other things, right. that are going on, when he's got a bunch of lawyers in the Oval Office right now, I don't think the Blagojevich commutation is really, you know, front and center.
But I think it's a big bet, right? I think you'd be betting against odds right now to say that when he leaves office, whenever that is, that I think that there will be some movement there. And the fact that he keeps mentioning it tells me even more. You get more convinced.
I'm always surprised by the number of people who say to me, it's enough already. You know, should let him go. It's enough already. And it's a funny thing, because we've got to remember, it's amazing how short our memory is about this. There was a reason that they banged him as hard as they did, which was he was the guy who was running as the clean alternative to George Ryan.
Right.
Right. And said, I would never do any of this, never do any of this, never do any of this. And it was from day one the stuff started. Right. And it was a way, finally, the federal courts here stopping and saying, hey, we got to stop. Are you people listening? Because everybody was getting 10 months somewhere.
There had been a buildup, right?
Yeah.
The sentences have been getting longer and longer. And you're right. Then finally, Judge Zagel just brought the hammer down.
Yes.
At least that's what he was thinking, that maybe a message would be sent.
But clearly not.
Right.
Right? Because we're literally, it's like having a flood in your basement. It's just all of a sudden the water's rising again of these guys.
There's, you know, it's an interesting way to put it.
The foosball table is floating in the basement again, is what's going on. All right, John Seidel, great work.
Yes, I'm excited about the book.
Thanks, guys.
Second City Sinners, True Crime from Historic Chicago's Deadly Streets. And I think this is going to be a national bestseller, too, because this is like one of those things where people, you know, people stop and they think about what's a crime-ridden city? Oh, yeah, Chicago. if I'm walking in the airport and I'm going through, you're looking at that big section there of the books I can read on the airplane. This is one of them.
Appreciate
I'd also
it.
Read this in jury duty, too.
Okay, I mean, good.
This is the kind of thing that would get you out of the courtroom if you read this in jury
good
duty.
Good holiday book, too.
Yeah. Oh, my God. For people who love this stuff.
I do love that stuff.
People who love the Chicago Daily News, too.
They do.
Which is
history.
You know, a great iconic fixture in Chicago. John, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you
being with us.
Appreciate it.
All right. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where the news is going to be coming to you from. That's coming your way in just about 2 minutes. And then, of course, the great Justin Kaufman will hold forth here on 720. WGN. Stay right here.